The Board of Regents to order. Could we please have a roll call?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Carter. Regent Carvalho. Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Chair Geddes.
Here.
Regent Hayes.
Here.
Regent Lieberman. Regent McAdoo.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Page. Regent Moran is here. So let the record reflect that Regent Moran is here. Regent Perkins.
Here.
Regent Trachuk. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Could you please stand for the presentation of the colors by the Nellis Honor Guard?
Stripes and bright stars.
Thank you. That was CSN student and member of the CSN Chamber Choral, Kayla Wisniewski. Now, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance led by Regent McAdoo. You may be seated, and thank you to all of our special guests for helping us today. We will now go to item number one, introductions and campus updates. President Solis.
Thank you, Regent Geddes, members of the board. Vince Solis, WNC president for the record. Has several updates from WNC. First, I want to start off by recognizing the six faculty members that will be presented to the board for their tenure status, along with the recognition with Ms. Jane Akonke, who was presented earlier for award in teaching. And we also have with us our chair of our faculty, Dr. Robert Morin. Chairman Geddes, it's my pleasure to report that the spring enrollment has followed suit with the fall enrollment. We are up by 13% in our headcount for this semester. We continue to grow, and we continue to look at enrollment efforts to enhance the campus experience for our students. We've also been selected to move into the next round of our application for the experimental site in our prison education program. We should know by April if we get that designation. Should we get that designation, that means that the students that we have in our prison education program would have access to Pell Grant opportunities. So we're hoping to bring that to the board as soon as we get that notification. Also, in line with our prison education program, we have two graduations coming up. Those will be taking place on June 17th and June 18th at both of our facilities in Carson City for the students that will be completing all of their credentials needed for receiving degrees from WNC in our prison education program. I'm also pleased to report that we've achieved HSI status. 34% of our students are now minority. We also submitted our first HSI grant application. We should know when those results are out if we were successful in submitting that. We recently conducted a survey that dealt with food insecurity on campus. The results were shocking to us. 38% of our students reported they are food insecure. So by the end of the semester, we'll be setting up a food pantry on campus to facilitate some of those services for our students. I'm also pleased to report that we've secured the $780,000 funding needed to purchase our mobile lab. You should be seeing that around town by the end of the middle of summer, going into fall semester for classes being offered in our service area. The Berger family has graciously awarded us $500,000 for scholarship endowment program that they have set up in their name. We also have a new EMS program that recently launched and is filled to 100% capacity, meeting the demands for programs like paramedic and EMS. On March 13th, we have our We Are Western event where we invite all of our regents to attend. That is to thank all of the donors that provide generous contributions to our students. And on the 27th, we have our second annual Friends of Western in Fallon. That event is completely sold out, and it will be our second event where we raise funds specifically for the Fallon and rural campuses. The Get Educated organization ranked the AA degree at Western as one of the top 10 most affordable liberal arts degree in the country. And Best Value Colleges also ranked WNC as one of the most affordable colleges for the third year in a row. University headquarters has ranked WNC in their top 99 most affordable schools in the country. And our nursing program has received two recent awards that have been very prestigious. One is that the Nursing Process Association ranked our nursing program number one in the state of Nevada. And nursing programs ranked WNC's nursing program number one in the West out of 426 programs. And those are my updates, Regent Geddes.
Thank you. President Acharya.
Thank you, Chairman Geddes. I wanted to start with our DRI's recently conducted external reviews. This is a review we typically do every 5 years. Our external review panel was on campus last week in Reno and Las Vegas, spent a week. The charge we gave this group was to review DRI's research areas, structure and to suggest new opportunities for scientific and engineering research and educational activities. It was a very productive and engaging week of meetings and conversations. We expect to have the final report back sometime in April, and I look forward to presenting it to the board. DRI leadership team update. Pleased to inform the board that our division executive director searches are going very well. This remains one of my top priorities, and we're making great progress. We completed our atmospheric sciences hire, welcomed candidates for hydrologic sciences to DRI last week and this week for interviews. We have posted for our Earth and Ecosystem Sciences position, and which we hope to complete by June. I'm honored to introduce Dr. Naresh Kumar, DRI's new executive director of the Division of Atmospheric Sciences. Dr. Kumar comes to DRI from the Electric Power Research Institute in Palo Alto, California, where he served as a senior program manager for about 20 years. He has a PhD in mechanical engineering from Carnegie Mellon University and an MBA from Walter Haas School of Public Business at UC Berkeley, and did his graduate work at UC Santa Barbara. Dr. Kumar should be with us in our Reno campus. I can't see him, and hopefully he's there. Nevada Regional STEM Networks. I'm pleased to share with the board that DRI has been selected by the Governor's Office of Science, Innovation, and Technology to create and lead 3 regional STEM networks across the state. Led by our Office of Education, these networks in southern, northwestern, and rural Nevada will coordinate partners representing K through 12 and higher education to identify and scale up STEM programs that will prepare students for Nevada's 21st century workforce. We'll be sending the board updates and invitations for the official launch of these new regional STEM networks at public STEM summits later this spring. Finally, 2020 Nevada Medal. On behalf of the DRI Foundation, I'm pleased to invite you all to attend our 2020 DRI Nevada Medal of Science events. This year's event will honor Dr. Catherine Sullivan, a distinguished scientist, an astronaut, explorer, and author of Handprints on Hubble, an Astronaut's Story of an Invention book. As you know, DRI's Nevada Medal of Science is the highest scientific honor in the state of Nevada and acknowledges outstanding achievement in the fields of science, technology, and engineering. This year, events will be held in Reno on May 20th and Las Vegas on May 21. Thank you.
Thank you. President Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I'd like to report a few things briefly. First of all, we already sent out the notice, but now we have final contracts for our student housing situation resulting from the explosion last summer. We are no longer going to be working with El Dorado Resorts on the Wolfpack Tower because Nye Hall will be completed, so we can move students back into that. So we have contracts with 2 brand-new apartment houses designed for student living near the campus, one on the northwest edge of campus, one on the south edge of campus. It's walkable. There will no longer be a bus service. We are on schedule then in the fall of 2021 to reopen Argenta Hall. All of that is under construction. We're still using the den for the feeding of about 3,500 students on the meal plan. We were, along with UNLV, identified as a Carnegie Engaged Institution. This was very important to us because we have been striving to get national recognitions as a top player in all 3 of our missions. The U.S. News and World Report for the last 10 years is a top-ranked school for education. The Carnegie R1, very high research, which we also share with UNLV in the December of 2018, and this year we got the Carnegie Engaged. It puts our universities on a map. And this is recognized nationally and internationally as we attract faculty and students to our universities. So these recognitions are important. Actually, the performance to get those recognitions is even more important, which we're very proud of. The University Arts Building, I give credit to our selection process for architects. The new University Arts Building has been open for a year, and they've already received 4 awards, 3 from the American Institute of Architects and one from the Engineering News magazine. It's a beautiful, functional building, and we're pleased to have it on campus. In terms of the coronavirus, we started with our issues management team meetings two Tuesdays ago when we saw that this was going to be an outbreak. If you remember, the issues management team is what we pulled together when we had the explosion last summer. It doesn't really matter what the incident is. If something's going to be very critical, we pull this group together and add the appropriate people we need, such as we added the Student Health Center Director and the Director of the Nevada Public Health Laboratory to our group. They are, the entire community up north is pulling together. In an incident, one of these institutions becomes the boss. The organizer and the Washoe County Health Department is the boss, so we follow their lead. They use CDC information. We've incorporated also the University Study Abroad program, and when the coronavirus hit Italy and Korea, we've been in contact with all of our students in those areas. We're bringing them home. We're giving them CDC advice about voluntary quarantine and things of that nature. So we've identified and communicated with each individual student that are on study abroad in those affected countries. And finally, just I'd like to tell you about a research project that you'll never see. Just to tell you the nature of research, our civil engineering pavement group is pretty well recognized in the country. They've been working for the last 5 years on a Federal Highway Administration grant to figure out a cheaper, faster way to determine travel costs on America's highways. So we have completed the project, and now all of the Federal Highway Administration is using the UNR model to use computer simulation techniques rather than going through the laborious process of going out and doing road tests to figure out what the cost of transportation is. So we're saving money for the federal government. We're doing it faster, more correctly, and it's just how research works. We make improvements along the way. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. President Helens.
Good afternoon, everyone. Joyce Helens, President, Great Basin College, for the record. I'd like to introduce Melanie Dodson, our SGA President here today, and George Klebb, our Faculty Senate Chair, both of whom are important members of the GBC leadership team. And I have five short items to share with you. One, GBC has recently created a college-bound certificate. This is a new credential that's providing high school students an opportunity to gain about 33 to 34 credits of general education courses prior to high school graduation. The credential best fits with our associate degree pathway, and it provides support to dual credit pathway. It documents a milestone for the students, and it builds connections and pathways between Great Basin College and the Nevada high schools that we serve. So kudos to the faculty who worked on that. Two, GBC Elementary Education Program received national recognition recently from the National Council on Teacher Quality. They praised our Baccalaureate of Arts in Elementary Education, which was Great Basin College's first baccalaureate back in the early 90s. The NCTQ president said, "The program is part of a very small group, about a quarter of the programs nationwide, to get an A grade." They recognize the strong preparation that our undergraduate program provides to elementary teacher candidates. Kudos to the education faculty. Three, Great Basin College, along with the Elko County School District and local contractors in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, are pleased to announce a new program of construction HVAC at the Elko High School that the college will be running. It's a partnership that will provide high school students 2 years of training in both construction and HVAC training. The startup funding is coming from the Governor's Office of Science, Innovation, and Technology and the school district. We were awarded $162,000 to equip the high school shop with HVAC and construction equipment, and the graduates will receive a National Center for Construction Education and Research credential. That will also lead to GBC credit and other CTE programs that we offer. So from an employer's perspective, credentials like this provide an attractive way to ensure a steady supply of skilled workforce. Congratulations to CTE Dean Brett Murphy. 4, registerednursing.org, a nursing advocacy organization, as well as RN Careers, have released their list of the 2020 best RN programs and have placed Great Basin College, both of those, as number one top in the state. Kudos to Dean Dinelli and our amazing nursing faculty. And 5, last but not least, the GBC Foundation Gala is March 21st. I appreciate the regents who have already signed up. We will be recognizing the new consolidation of Barrick and Newmont Mining, Nevada Gold, for their decade of investment in higher education with Great Basin College. We're also honoring Dr. Hugh Collette, one of the GBC founders. Dr. Collette just turned 99. He recently resigned from the IAC, where he was a founding member and has contributed for decades. I recently visited with Dr. Collette to thank him for his selfless commitment to making our community stronger and healthier, and for the legacy that he's built that enables students to achieve a life-fulfilling goal, and that is a college credential. And it's because of people like Dr. Hugh Collette, we are the gold standard in the Silver State. Thank you.
Thank you. President Hilgerson.
Okay, first of all, a couple of intros. Happy to be here with our Faculty Senate Chair, Ann Flesher, who is also the co-chair of the math department and doing some amazing work on co-requisites. And, of course, our student government president, Alexandra Patry. So glad to be here. First of all, I want to say congrats to those faculty who will likely be approved for tenure at this meeting. The portfolios were once again truly remarkable, and faculty in those portfolios demonstrated excellent teaching, strong growth in professional development, and strong service to their communities. So I'm very proud of them. And also congrats to Jennifer Pierce, our Regents Advisor Award. Wow, we're so thankful for her amazing work. And congrats to Regents Scholar Sarah Wynn Goodman. Her story, her passion for nursing, and her mission to help others globally is really, really touching. So I'm very pleased about that. Overall, spring term seems to be going very well, although necessary planning for how we manage the coronavirus has dampened our springtime zest a bit, but we are planning, and hopefully we will be ready to handle what lies ahead. Our work continues nonetheless. We have submitted requests for several large grants, and we're in that time where we just wait to see which will be funded. If we are funded for some of these large grants, they will respond directly to employer needs in our community and help us fund some really, really great work, and also some added dollars for student wraparound services that benefit special populations. And since we are an HSI institution, especially targeting the Latino-Latina population that we serve. So enrollments are solid. We hope to close the year slightly ahead of the snapshot enrollment from about 2 years ago, and considerable growth in dual enrollment programs is one of the reasons that this has occurred. So we're really happy about that. Nothing better than going in with a steady budget. It can really help make planning effective. The math and English faculty continue to work effectively on planning for the co-requisite model. Math faculty held a very successful internal summit on January 21st. What I thought was really cool about it is some of the participants were some of the faculty leaders who aren't teaching math, but they could see how the new innovations and the new course changes will actually be really, really helpful to some of the non-STEM majors. And hopefully it will teach them a greater appreciation for math, which is really good. So I'm looking forward to the pilot, and I'm seeing positive effects upon persistence and completions in our gateway courses as well. But I'm really thankful to the faculty and also to the deans who are really working hard, including Deans Julie Ellsworth and Dean Paul Allen, and, of course, their fearless leader, Dr. Marie Mergolo. It's been really good work. That said, we are gearing up for our March 13th grand opening of our new health and fitness center, and of course you are all invited. Students are really enjoying the space, and I'm happy to report that the project, which included a soccer field and the fitness center, has come in on budget. Also, on Thursday, March 26th, we will be hosting a really fabulous, internationally known speaker, Dr. Donald Johansson. And Donald Johansson will be speaking of his discovery of a 3.2-million-year-old fossil hominem known as Lucy. And I think some of you may know who Lucy is. And he will be speaking as part of the Diane Cheseldine Distinguished Speaker Series event at TMCC. We will round out the term with theater, dance, and musical performances, shows in our art gallery, and a student photography show, as well as moving into recognition ceremonies, student awards, and a May 20, 2020 commencement. And we hope that all of you can join us. I'll close by saying that we are working closely with Dr. Solis from WNC, with help and leadership from Vice Chancellor Nate McKinnon, on a shared service that I think will be very exciting, and we'll probably be able to tell you more detail on that in June. So thank you.
Thank you. President Patterson.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Really an exciting semester this far at Nevada State College. We've had a few announcements, including a little one yesterday, but the real important stuff is that we had our education building groundbreaking for the new 65,000-square-foot Glenn and Andy Christensen School of Education building. Many of you were there. We had the Foothill Band, which is nationally recognized from across the street. Several hundred in attendance, including the governor and several of the regents, and thank you for being there. It's just a really exciting time to celebrate our expansion in education programs, which are so important for the state, and to recognize Glenn and Andy Christensen, which have been a bedrock supporters of the institution from its inception. We also received the great news that our accreditation was renewed. So we had our initial accreditation 7 years ago, and now we have been renewed in a report that I would describe as quite positive. We had commendations related to the intentional development and implementation of key student success initiatives and services, particularly for first-year students. Commendation for our services through the Mary Dean Martin Library, which I'll say a little bit more about in a minute. For fulfilling a mission of providing a responsive network of services, and for its use of evidence-based measurement to create a student-centric learning environment, and for having an excellent and well-maintained physical and technological infrastructure. We have some recommendations that we need to work on in the next 7 years that are around assessment and developing objectives and indicators for the college that will help us better measure the success of our programs. So we're very excited about that. The third thing I want to mention is the award that the library received, and it's, I think, maybe a little underplayed in the state by the media, but our library received national recognition for the 2020 Excellence in Academic Libraries Award by the Association of College and Research Libraries. And just to give you a sense of perspective, that's only the second time a public college has received that award in the history of the award. It's the first time an Hispanic-serving institution has received the award, and it's the only time any library in Nevada has received an award from the association. So, yes, thank you. And I know the director of libraries, Nathaniel King, is here, along with Tiffany Garrett, who's also up for tenure, on the consent agenda. If they would please rise and be acknowledged. Their work is really extraordinary also in the space of open source textbooks. They have saved students over $500,000 already and counting. 20% of the faculty have now gone through this initiative to learn how to develop open source materials. So you can imagine how we're going to continue to grow that and save students money. It's really important. I also want to acknowledge, and there was a lot of discussion in health sciences about RN to BSN programs. Our RN to BSN program, which is a fully online program, was ranked in the top 30 by Intelligent.com as a top value program, ranked ahead of like ASU and UMass and South Carolina, Missouri and Rutgers and all these large institutions. It was the only program ranked by that publication in Nevada. And we have nearly 400 students now taking classes in that program, just to give you a sense of the scale of the program. I want to also acknowledge that our housing project has now gone vertical. We're up on the to the second floor now. It looks like it's going to happen the fall of 2020. So we're getting kind of excited about that. It's adding to the construction chaos on the campus, but we're excited about it. The other thing I want to mention in coordination with the College of Southern Nevada and Dr. Zaragoza is we have started a campus commuter between West Charleston to North Las Vegas, CSN campuses, then from North Las Vegas through the East Valley to Henderson, CSN, and Nevada State College. The ridership is starting to spike, which is what we hoped. We'll be giving a full report to the board as we get toward the end of the semester, because this is really going to be measured by how many students ride this service by the end of the semester. But we had just an amazing groundbreaking with the Lieutenant Governor and many other dignitaries in attendance. And there is a lot of excitement by our students, in particular our student governments, around this project. And finally, we have a fight song now. All will hell black and gold. We might need a sports team, but we have a fight song. But it was written by a second grade teacher here in the Clark County School District, Jeff Rapp. And we debuted it at the Education Building groundbreaking. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. President Miana.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. There's a lot going on at UNLV. As President Johnson mentioned, UNLV earned the Carnegie Classification for Community Engagement Distinction, of which we're very, very proud. It reflects our longstanding commitment to working together with our partners to solve challenges and to create opportunities for our community. And we are, as Mark is and UNR is, particularly proud to hold both the research and community engagement distinctions simultaneously. And because nursing is very, very popular in today's meeting, I have to say that the UNLV School of Nursing's online graduate nursing program maintained its status as one of the best in the nation, surging to 11th place on U.S. News & World Report's 2020 survey of top online degree programs, and the program has, in fact, ranked in the top 30 since 2012. A few days ago, toward the end of February, UNLV received a remarkable $9 million gift from the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians. And this gift will support course development and professorships at the William F. Harrah College of Hospitality and the William S. Boyd School of Law. The historic agreement will, for the first time, infuse the unique elements of tribal gaming into the world's leading hospitality and gaming program, and it will add a tribal gaming emphasis to the nation's only master's degree program in gaming law. So it's really a big deal. Speaking of Boyd Law School, their immigration clinic officially launched the University Legal Services Program at the College of Southern Nevada in January with our partners here. The center expands services offered at UNLV to CSN's student community, including direct legal assistance for students and their families who are facing challenges related to immigration. As Dean Files said, we're very excited about the addition of Dr. Mark J. Khan as the new dean for UNLV's School of Medicine. Dr. Khan is a hematologist and medical oncologist who also served as senior associate dean at Tulane University School of Medicine. UNLV's Colleges of Engineering and Education are teaming up to help undergraduate civil engineering students stay in school and graduate. The interdisciplinary project, supported by a $2.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation, will strengthen curriculum, build community among students and faculty, and help faculty implement culturally responsive teaching practices. Finally, research and innovation in Southern Nevada took what I think is a major step forward on January 23rd with the opening of the debut building at the UNLV Harry Reid Research and Technology Park in Las Vegas. The centerpiece of the building is Blackfire Innovation, which brings UNLV and Caesars Entertainment together in one space to advance current trends in hospitality and gaming technology. Much like UNR, UNLV continues to closely monitor all available expert information and response recommendations around the coronavirus outbreak. We've established a task force and a website for the UNLV community. In the coming weeks, we hope to see you at our Barrack Lecture Series, where we're thrilled to welcome Deepak Chopra on March 23rd to discuss the nature of reality. And with everything that's going on right now, I think we may all be in need of a collective meditation session. So, but as always, we thank you for your support of UNLV. Thank you.
Thank you. President Zaragoza.
Chairman Geddes, Regents, Chancellor, colleagues, and guests, on behalf of the CSN family, it is my pleasure to welcome you to our CSN Henderson campus and to our new Student Union facility. As you know, we have a replica in each one of our campuses. As the first order of business, I want to acknowledge our Faculty Senate Chair, Dr. Arnold Bell, and our 23 CSN faculty members being recommended for tenure. I want to acknowledge our Student Government President, Daniel Gutierrez, and the CSN Campus Vice President and Provost Patty Charlton, as well as CSN Events Manager Michelle Ward and her team, who did much of the heavy lifting in preparation for this meeting. I also want to just take a second to comment a little bit on the comments that have been made about the NFA and CNA agreement. I want to tell you that we have an agreement in concept and that it's being codified, and that you will be getting a lot more information as the timelines and rollout in the foreseeable future. But again, we're very pleased that we are at this point in the process, and also want to acknowledge and recognize and thank all those involved that got us to this point. I also want to take just a few minutes to acknowledge that our enrollment continues to grow. Our spring enrollment continues to show that we're moving on a three-year trajectory where enrollment overall is increasing, and we attribute this growth to our very robust pipeline and the growth of our dual enrollment programs. Our Promise Scholarship, which has a pool of almost 3,000 students, including 350 students that have completed all program requirements, including their community services, and are ready to enroll at CSN this fall. I'm also pleased to kind of acknowledge that our apprenticeship programs are growing significantly. And this spring, we recorded 1,449 students. So our pipelines are certainly trending in the right direction. As part of our student first imperative, I just want to comment on the comments that President Patterson made, and I want to acknowledge his leadership in the process. Had it not been for him intervening and calling at all weird hours of the night to keep this program on the table, we wouldn't be here either. So, President Patterson, thank you so much for being so diligent in making these services available to all our students. On the positive side, again, continuing to build on that theme, CSN received $40,000 from the MGM Foundation to pay tuition for 60 CSN high school students to take necessary courses that are needed for them to complete their associate's degrees. We are projecting that as many as 100 of our CSN high school students will walk the CSN graduation stage before they participate in their high school graduations. This is a step in the right direction and a part of our strategy of transforming our CSN high schools into early college programs. As a community college, we strive to be relevant to the local communities that we serve. And as an example, in the past 30 days, the CSN North Las Vegas campus, under the leadership of Vice President Provost Clarissa Cota, hosted three major standing room only events at the Horn Theater. On February 15th, CSN hosted the Sri Lanka community as they celebrated their 72nd anniversary of independence. The event featured many historical, cultural, education, and political aspects of the Sri Lanka community. Over 600 participants attended the event. On February 28th, the CSN Student Government, the African American Heritage Committee, the CSN Campus Live, and the CSN Leadership Development Committee sponsored a DEN talk with Raymond Santana Jr., one of the Central Park Five individuals who spent 5 years in prison for a crime they did not commit. Their story, When We See Raymond, was featured on Netflix, and over 500 student and community members attended the event. Finally, on February 13, 2020, CSN hosted a nationally televised presidential town hall organized by the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, and the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. The event was televised by Telemundo, and according to the Latino Strategies Media, the event reached a large national Latino audience and generated almost $2 million in earned media and line and exposure for CSN. I briefly want to highlight you on some other activities. Our multi-campus operations continue to evolve. Our three campus vice presidents and provosts are currently working to bring more community resources to our students. Under the leadership of Dr. Sonia Pearson, CSN is codifying an agreement with Workforce Connections to establish a one-stop workforce center at each one of our campuses. We also continue to expand our inventory of food products at our pantries. To date, over 1,500 students have participated in our food pantry services. You may have noticed construction next to this building, and that's the CSN NSC Health and Science building going up. We're planning for a fall 2021 opening and are in the planning stages for a donor appreciation celebration and for a topping off ceremony for later in the summer, and more to come as well. I would like to conclude my report with a few HR announcements. First, I am pleased to welcome Dr. Bill Dial to CSN as our new Chief of Human Resources. He comes to CSN by way of Metropolitan Community College in Kansas City and the Richland College System in Dallas, where he held comparable positions. Bill, if you could just stand and be recognized. Thank you, Bill. In addition, the CSN family congratulates Associate Vice President of Academic Affairs Jim McCoy on his role with ENCHI as the new Assistant Vice Chancellor for Student Success and Director of Corequit Implementation. I want to personally thank James for his many contributions to student success at CSN, and as I informed the Chancellor, ENCHI is getting a rock star. Finally, we hope to be able to attend the reception this afternoon. We have planned a very special event that features a musical performance by the CSN Mariachi Plata. Mr. Chairman, that constitutes my report.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 2, institutional student and faculty presentations. President Zaragoza.
I'm trying to find my notes over here. Mr. Chairman, Regents, and guests, for the record, my name is Federico Zaragoza. It is my honor to introduce CSN student DeAndrew Harrington and Professor Earl Yoon to present the CSN program highlights. DeAndrew Harrington is studying computer science and its role in the field of physical and social sciences. He plans to pursue graduate studies in the field of computational neuroscience to improve the connection between computers, scientific research, and the general population. In his spare time, Mr. DeAndrew focuses on computer programming, essay writing, and linguistics. With him is Professor Earl Yoon. Professor Yoon is a tenure-track instructor who has begun teaching at CSN in 2015. He joined CSN's Biological Science Department after graduating from the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a master's in bacteriology. Professor Yoon and several other professors began the C-Pages program to increase student involvement in biological research. He believes that exposing undergraduate research empowers students to take ownership of their work, develop critical thinking skills, and explore exciting careers in the sciences. Without further ado, sir, our CSN highlights.
All right. Thank you for the kind introductions, Dr. Zaragoza. I'm looking for the clicker, though. Apologize. So this program, CPhages, which has a very long name, just an acronym, is designed to immerse students in a real research experience where they discover new bacteriophages from the local environment. So this program is already established at UNLV and UNR, and they've done it for many years. This is the first time CSN has now implemented this type of program, and we wanted to model our success based on theirs. And so on the screen, you see two of our cohorts. We started this program in 2018. And so at CSN, we really wanted our students to get more research opportunities, which were kind of lacking at this time. And so a group of us, including Professors Aaron Windsor, James Theoret, Chelsea McKenna, Deborah Harbour, and I decided to start this program at CSN to hopefully expand research opportunities for our own students and help them find success. And so our first cohort up there, class 2018-2019, is up there. And next to them is pictured a phage that they discovered, which is totally new and totally cool. And then the picture below that is our current cohort, which also includes DeAndre Harrington, the student next to me, or behind me. So he, at class 2019-2020, and they are currently working right now to characterize their new phage. And so before beginning any further, bacteriophage, just make sure that we're all on the same page, are special viruses that only infect bacteria, which, so unlike coronavirus, which infects humans, these phages only infect bacteria, and they have a lot of great therapeutic use, especially in an era where there's lots of antibiotic resistance going on, which is currently a global crisis. And so we were hoping to use these phages and build this huge library with the help of C phages to try to combat that problem. Just to add also, C phages is international. It includes lots of different schools and universities, over 100. Also has involved tens of thousands of different students over the years. And it's all this one big concerted global effort to catalog as many different phages as possible and use them for future applications. And so I like to add that from my personal point of view in this program, I love seeing the students so excited about biology. I'm engaging them in a space where they can really use their critical thinking skills and solve problems and also learn perseverance. Research, as many of you might know, doesn't always work the first time or second time or third time. And there's a lot of struggles that they go through. And it's really rewarding to see students power through those struggles and grow at the result of that. And so I'm going to also say that I'm hoping CSNO will be able to offer more research opportunities in the future for students because I find that along with teaching, research gives students the ability to engage and to apply what they've learned in the classroom in a real-world setting. And I think that for our mission at CSN to really drive success, we also should provide opportunities just like this. So I'm hoping that this will be a good call. And so I'm going to stop my bit. I'm really done. I'm actually going to turn this over to the star of our show, which is DeAndre Harrington. He's an excellent student. He's actually a first author on a publication we are writing about the phages we discovered in our first cohort. And so we're actually going to do a genome announcement hopefully this year. And so we're going to have a publication for our current students. And hopefully that, and anyone can read that, and it's really awesome. And so I'm going to turn this over to DeAndre Harrington.
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little nervous right now, but I would like to approach the board and thank just a few individuals before we get started. I would like to thank Professor Earl Yoon, Dr. Aaron Windsor, Dr. James Theoret, Dr. Chelsea McKenna, Dr. Kendra Kimberly. Obviously, President Zaragoza, thank you very much for having me here today. It really does mean a lot. I would also like to thank Vice President Margot Martin. Again, thank you very much for the invitation to come back and speak on this research, in which I'm very passionate about. And I hope that we all know that a lot of other students are passionate about this research, too. I would also like to go ahead and thank our AVP, James McCoy, along with the rest of our CSN regents and provosts. So thank you all very much for having me. It really does mean a lot. Thank you. Now, there are different train tracks throughout life, and I think we can all acknowledge that. We all go through life in a very different way, whether we're studying science, biology, sociology, the arts, music, policing, law, everything in between. Now, what I mean by that is everyone goes through life differently, and CSN, I found, is a very good starting point in order to escalate as what I remember President Zaragoza, that economic engine that kind of gets everything started. Now, with this, I promise this is not Xavier's School for the Gifted. This was actually a school I went to in New York known as Milneck Manor. It was a school for the blind because I'm blind. Funny fact. But one thing that they had taught us in this academy was the importance of communication. That just because I couldn't see, it didn't mean that I couldn't have a vision of a better future. Not just for myself, but for my fellow colleagues, along with working with individuals much like Yoon and the rest of our team as well. Now, with this, it's kind of like a neuron, right? We're inputting this information, we're gathering this together, we are sparking ideas, and we're shooting it off one way, and we're taking it to the other. Much like how CSN communicates with other NSHE members. We have individuals from Reno here today, UNLV today. We're all sharing those kind of ideas and abstracts in order for us to become stronger for it. So when we're looking at these abstracts, something that we need to understand is that not all things are equal. 29% of women and only 11% of minorities are currently enrolled in STEM fields. That is a terrible number. That is not a statistically significant amount of information that we should be gathering. And even then, we have to remember in the rule of subsets in mathematics, this does not always equal graduation. So enrollment does not always equal graduation, so we have to remember that those train tracks for some, like myself, when the opportunities that I had when I was younger, it could just be a nice smooth coast with a little bit of difficulties along the way. But sometimes those train tracks could feel like mountains for others. And we have to acknowledge that, especially as the provost and our entire team members here at NG. So how are we going to fix that? And I'm going to recommend the CPHAGES program. Now, the CPHAGES program is a 7-step program that focuses on student first, which is something that I've been hearing tossed around quite a bit here at the College of Southern Nevada, and I couldn't be prouder of it. We start with isolation, purification, amplification, microscopy, extraction and characterization, along with getting further information there, too. Now, it all starts with a jar of dirt. We challenge the rest of our staff, and along with myself and other students, we go outside as real scientists. I go outside, and a park ranger stops me, and he says, "What are you doing with that shovel in this public park?" "Well, I'm trying to get some dirt." "Well, why are you getting some dirt?" We go through the processes to get the permits. We go through speaking to the appropriate channels. We learn how to communicate with our community in order to get this information. Much like one of the opportunities I've had as a manager at the MGM, I had the opportunity to speak to many individuals in order to utilize those resources to get some of my soil samples too. Now, we take those soil samples and we go into the lab. Now, as you notice at the very bottom, these are actual CSN students interacting with professors in real time. This is not a cookie-cutter lab. This cookie-cutter lab, we actually ended up getting quite a few problems. We didn't always get the expected result. We couldn't become married to our hypotheses. We had to push forward as scientists, not as students, to say, why isn't this working? Hours and hours and days, dare I say months, of reading publications, and we were finally able to figure out what we can do in order to solve the problem. And this was able to bring us up to our next step, which is bioinformatics and statistical modeling. Now, bioinformatics and statistical modeling is the use of informatics, which is information theory, to understand how data points can be looked at in a statistically meaningful way by either using Bayesian models or Markov mathematics. Now, this is incredibly exciting to me because this bridges the gap between biology, mathematics, chemistry. It starts to paint this incredible web, a web that I know that the College of Southern Nevada is working so hard in order to achieve. Now, with this web, we input all this information, I develop a few programs, and boom, we get actual phages. These viruses were discovered by CSN students and CSN students alone. And I think that that deserves a celebration. They all took the amount of time in order to categorize and prepare and send this content out to other universities like Brigham Young in order to actually see these phages. And now not only do the students go from that jar of dirt that I was talking about to that information in bioinformatics, but they can physically see, hey, there's something here. I found something. How incredible was it when you had your very first day sitting wherever you were in college, and someone said, what you have here is extraordinary. There were students in our class that was legitimately on the tears of joy. And they said, I cannot believe I found this. And to hear from our professors like Professor Yoon and Dr. Theoret, you guys are all scientists. And we all need to start looking at it like that. Now, it has a very interesting loop. Now, what I say by that is we're gathering new insights, we gather a new biological question, we take these technologies and techniques, and this is rolling everything together. Now, this focuses more on computational neuroscience with CPHAGES because I like to say it's a feedback loop in nature. We're able to take this information, we go to our professors and say, look what we found. Is this meaningful? We have a genuine conversation. How is this information variable? How can we prove this? Is this actually statistically significant? What tests have we done to perform this? And it's a back and forth that is genuine like no other class that I've ever taken here at the College of Southern Nevada. It takes the opportunity for us as the students to become the scientists in our own research methods. Now, once we have this information, I had the opportunity to travel to Virginia in order to actually present this information to an international audience. I was able to meet actually two of my heroes, Dr. Graham Hatfield and Pardis Sabeti from MIT. And I told them that I wanted to go to MIT. And what did I need to do in order to get there? They had a conversation with me, genuine, and they said, well, DeAndre, if you already have a publication, keep striving for your dreams and don't give up. And regardless of what's going on with your vision and everything else in between, I promise you that no, wherever you go, you're always going to have a great time. So we took this information and we plotted it. So these are all the individuals that came all across the United States to say, look at all these students that discovered something so amazing. And this is ours in Hagos back in 2018. Look at all of those schools. Look at all of those connections we've built. I still have individuals on my cell phone right here from that very conference that I talk to daily about content that I'm working on, and they are just as excited. But it gets more. It's an international stage. I met individuals from Africa. I met individuals from Mexico. I met individuals from Australia. I met individuals from all around the world that were so excited, just as excited as us. We were all able to share our information. We were all able to share our research for the greater good. And for me, being exposed on an international stage is amazing, as I'm sure all of you already know. Now, this is Isabella. Isabella is a patient that has cystic fibrosis, a disease that unfortunately causes contents within the lungs itself and will lead to death. Due to a successful operation for a lung transplant entirely, there was actually a risk for emsmigmatis, and Isabella essentially was on the brink of death. Our research, coupled with Dr. Graham Hatfield's insights to genetic engineering, was able to take the phages that were discovered by this program, and now Isabella is no longer on the brink of death. She's in high school now. She's alive because of research we did. So we're able to see that this research that we're doing, even if we are the starting step of the C-Phages program, we are able to save lives. Could you imagine telling a freshman or a sophomore that your research saved somebody's life? That's incredible. But I know this is obviously getting a little boring, so I want to actually jump into the data. So the data obviously speaks for itself. I'm a big data person. I love talking about data, but I also love telling stories, which is one of the reasons why I love speaking so much, as I'm sure you're all already aware. We can see at C-Phages itself, any student that takes part within the C-Phages, regardless if it is any type of degree or if it's STEM research fields, we are always seeing a 10 to 25% increase in student success overall. That is a statistical significance of 25%. That's one in four students we're seeing getting better at success, thriving, understanding the material. We can also see these students' grade point averages always increase. The red we can see are C-Phages institutions that are studied. We can see that not only are individuals that go from failing grades drastically dropping, we can see individuals with A that are well excelling, not only surpassing that, but we're able to see that they are able to talk more confidently about the data. Looking at the next graph here, the red triangles represent C-Phages again. This was an international survey completed by the University of Pittsburgh along with the C-Phages cohorts. And they also sent this questionnaire out to all students taking part in the C-Phages program. And we see that every point they've highlighted, everything increases. Public speaking, grant writing, understanding how to work in a lab, confidence. Confidence is such a powerful thing. So realistically, the one takeaway, in conclusion to this talk today, I wanted to say this. We have 75% of freshmen and sophomores in the C-Phage program. We have 18 community colleges, and we have 120 publications. Like I said, with CSN being focused on freshmen and sophomores, it only makes sense that CPhages is looked at for either expansion or use in the biology department for further research. Obviously, we see the numbers are there. So I would like to go ahead and close out to the entire provost, the regents, President Zaragoza, by saying this. Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I may remember. But involve me and I learn. Always. So thank you very much, and I hope we have an incredible day. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for your time.
Thank you both very much. Appreciate the presentation. We will now go to item number 3, public comment. Chief of Staff Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Public comment will be taken during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes per person. Persons making comment will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and to spell their last name. The board chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that item is being considered. In accordance with Attorney General Opinion Number 00-047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the board chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents, or if the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
We do not.
Do we have any public comment in Elko?
We do have public comment in Elko.
We do?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Approach the podium, state your name, and you have 2 minutes.
My name is Elena Peterson. Last name spelled P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N. I'm a senior at Spring Creek High School in Elko County, and I am here to promote the University of Nevada, Reno Extension Legislative Budget Enhancement Request as a 4-H member. I have been an active member of 4-H for 9 years and have participated in leadership, sheep, livestock judging, horse, and dog projects. Perhaps the best advantage that I have gained from 4-H is through national trips, which would benefit greatly from a budget increase. In April of 2018, I traveled to Washington, D.C. for the National 4-H Conference. I was able to work with a group of youth my age with the Farm Service Agency to propose a solution to a government problem and was able to meet with our state congressman. Later in that year, in November, I attended the National 4-H Livestock Judging Contest in Louisville, Kentucky, and it further increased my passion for the livestock industry. Unfortunately, in both of these activities, Nevada had among the smallest delegation attending. After discussing it with other members, it was determined that the cost was a primary issue. Another provision of the proposed budget increase was an increase in staff. My leadership positions in the past have required me to work closely with 4-H staff to plan and execute activities, and it is crucial that there are individuals within Extension who are dedicated to help members achieve their goals. This leads me to the best aspect about the program. It gives youth a vision and a purpose. The motto of the program is to make the best better. 4-H provides the chance to make the best even better than it is. 4-H holds a unique value in that it is training the next generation of leaders, producers, and innovators. My question to you is, do you want to have a part in this life-changing process? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well-timed, by the way. Is there any other public comment in Elko?
I'll say.
No further public comment in Elko.
Okay, we'll go to public comment here in Henderson. Please approach the mic, state your name, and you have 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Grace Zielinski, spelled Z-I-E-L-I-N-S-K-I. I'm here in support of the University of Nevada Reno Extension Legislative Budget Enhancement and to share my experience as a youth in 4-H and how it has truly changed my life. 4-H was established in 1902 with its focus on agriculture. Since then, it has grown to be much more than that. The projects my club has are robotics, cooking, sewing, photography, archery, American Sign Language, community service, arts and crafts, animals, and market animals. My club is known for robotics. We were the first 4-H club to start a team in the first robotics organization in 2010. We currently have 4 teams and have helped start and mentor teams throughout Clark County. I've been in 4-H for 13 years. 4-H constantly feeds youth curious minds, developing their social and life skills through its engaging hands-on experience. 4-H opens doors that schools never could. Through 4-H, I've become a leader. Being a leader isn't telling people what to do. It's guiding and creating a team through communication, using our individual strengths to reach a common goal. 4-H has shown me that the STEM world is so much bigger than it appears to be. Because of 4-H, I found my passion and know the steps I need to take to reach above and beyond my dreams. I want to major in environmental education so I can teach kids about the impact they have on our world. In 2019, my club completed over 2,000 hours of community service and would do it all over again because those are the best memories we've created. Without 4-H, I wouldn't come close to being the person that I am today, and I would know absolutely nothing about robotics. If every kid did 4-H, the world would be a brighter and more sustainable place. 4-H raises the leaders of tomorrow, and tomorrow is almost today. Thank you for letting me share my love of 4-H.
Thank you. Next.
Hello, my name is Danaya Kelly, last name spelled K-E-L-L-E-Y, and I am here today in regards to the UNR Extensive Legislator Budget Enhancement Request. I am a former 4-H youth and now work at the University of Nevada, Reno Extension with Clark County 4-H program. 4-H is something that is very important to me, and as I joined 4-H when I was 7 years old and continued through high school, and as I mentioned, I am still involved with this today. Most of my life, I have lived in the same urban area within Clark County and attended public magnet schools, eventually leading me to college at UNR. At UNR, I studied psychology and sociology, earning 2 bachelor's degrees of arts. Upon graduation, I obtained a position at the UNR Extension, and it has helped me find who I am and what I want to do as a career. Through 4-H, I have learned many life skills that I could have only obtained through the hands-on experience that 4-H provides that I'd like to share briefly with you today. One of the many projects that I participated in was raising livestock animals for the county fair. Through this project, we learned how to properly care for, treat, and show animals. We learned the value of working as a team, how to teach others who are learning something new, and how to be a leader in various situations. These hands-on projects were lessons that many youth in big cities are not often exposed to and showcase the importance of agriculture, farming, and the overall need of connecting our rural and urban communities. Through various 4-H volunteer projects, I learned the importance of being aware of the needs of our community and gained a great sense of gratitude for the world I live in and the need to always give back when and where I can. My current position teaching civic engagement skills to our 4-H youth in the community centers through Las Vegas. My hope is that other youth can experience the same love and home I found within 4-H, a place that has brought me some of my closest friends and taught me some of the most valuable life lessons that I would not have had the opportunity to learn in a book or in a traditional school setting. Without 4-H, I do not believe I would have been afforded the same opportunities in college nor have found the job I have today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Combs, C-O-M-B-S. My nickname is Izzy. That stuck from childhood. I was never raised in 4-H, even though I was raised in a small town in northern Utah called Slaterville, which at the time was a farming community that has now grown by ridiculous amounts. I am here in support of the University of Nevada Reno Extension Legislative Budget Environment Enhancement as a 4-H leader. Our projects in our club that I started 3 years ago have to do with poultry, rabbits, drawing, livestock, animals, photography, baking, Lego robotics, thanks to the Boulder City Club that helped us get started, and Rubik's Cube solving. A way to perhaps measure 4-H productivity is by counting awards, as I've heard you all state tonight in many ways. Our club's Lego robotics team, Clover Bunny Bots, competed in the first Lego League Southern Nevada qualifier and received the third on their core values. In addition, they qualified for the next level and won the programming award, which focused on teamwork, critical thinking, and the ability to work together to optimize a plan and organize them as the youth. Our club started the second Luger Robotics team this year, and last year competed against 32 teams and won the judges' award. Our club also started a Rubik's Cube cubing team and finished second place in the great state of Nevada at the Las Vegas Science and Technology Expo last May. The team solved 25 Rubik's Cubes in 9 minutes and 19 seconds. Our very own Parker Higginseth, our sweet little 11-year-old boy, is ranked number one in the state of Nevada and number two in the nation for Rubik's Cube speed. He can do it blindfolded. I've seen him do it. We attended the 4-H Expo in Winnemucca. And our very own Alyssa Lincoln is a cute little 12-year-old girl who wrote her own song and taught herself how to play the guitar and performed for a demonstration, which she won first, and was asked to perform the same award at the big awards assembly with everybody. I understand she's written another song that I'm excited to hear. Let's see. I understand in your position you are required to have some way of to measure your progress, which often involves tracking the number that have signed up in 4-H. May I urge you to remember that those numbers you are looking at represent people, youth, leaders, and families. Quality sometimes is more important than quantity. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner?
Thank you. Good afternoon, honorable regents and Mr. Chairman, of course, Mr. Chancellor. Let me say what a blessing it is to be here with you all today. Considering the emerging issue that we're dealing with here in Clark County today, I still found it was so important for me to drive over here to share my thoughts and to lend my support to Nevada Cooperative Extension and the 4-H program. What they've done from the south to the north to our rural communities have truly been amazing, have touched the lives of a lot of young people and families. And as we deliberate and we look at our budgets, we're all going through our budget cycles right now, it's about prioritizing and looking at what is it that we all are collectively doing to affect families all across Nevada. And when I look at this program here, I thought for a minute, I said to Dr. Lyles and his team, I'm wanting to know what is it that you all are doing to help touch the lives of inner city kids. And when I look at the amount of exposure that a lot of these kids who have never had an opportunity to even see a farm, to have an opportunity to go and participate in a science fair, let alone be exposed to STEM and STEAM type projects, this is where it's at. And as I sat here and I listened to the professor and the student talk about C-Phages program, am I saying that correctly? Absolutely amazing. As a Nevadan, again, I know what it's like to be exposed. And when we take these young, brilliant minds here and we expose them to something way beyond what they can imagine, these are the results that we would get. I enjoyed it. I don't know how bored you all got with that presentation, but I thought it was absolutely amazing. Listening to public comment, I know what it's like when it gets repetitive, but when it's something that the community is passionate about, I don't have a problem sitting and listening to it. It says to me it's something that we have to get behind. And so I would ask you, Mr. Chairman and honorable regents, please take this into consideration as you all deliberate on your budget. And let's talk about what is it that we all can do, because we're in a war right now. I wore my camouflage out here for you all to show. We're in a big fight of our lives right now, Mr. Chairman. We have a situation that's going on here. I'm sure you all are aware of it. We're all in this thing together. There is no north and no south and no rules. We are one Nevada. And that's it at the end of the day. Thank you all very much. God bless
you
all.
Thank you, sir. Next.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, Stephanie Molina, MOLINA, president of the Graduate and Professional Student Association. I am here in front of the board today as a censured student government president. I was never given any official UNLV or NC documentation regarding my position prior to the UNLV Graduate College sending out a defamatory email to approximately 5,000 graduate and professional students stating that I was no longer serving as the president of the organization. Actions are being taken and processes are being bypassed because of my position in order to coerce, intimidate, discriminate, and harass. Moreover, I have been told by the Office of Student Conduct that UNLV and NC codes authorize such actions that arose from an investigated retaliatory allegations being made against me. As such, I am here to ask what codes authorize the neglect of UNLV NC Student Conduct Code, NC Title II, Chapter 6, or NC Title II, Chapter 10, Policies and Procedures, which describe due process proceedings. What allows offices and administrators to request the presence of students under false pretenses? What allows a college of the university to violate FERPA and to make announcements of professional competence as it pertains to the role of an elected member of a public body without providing written notification in a meeting subject to NRS 241? What allows someone to be terminated from a completely unrelated position as a disciplinary action? And what allows compensation to be made without work when mention of this discriminatory action is made? What allows retaliation and discrimination under Title IX? As a member of the Nevada Student Alliance, I would like to request that the board, in conjunction with the NSA and ANSI Student Affairs, work to form a task force to work together to clarify ANSI Title IV, Chapter 20B, outlining the separation of student governments and the various institutions. As such, I hope that you will encourage student government public bodies to self-govern through revision of the ANSI handbook. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Hello. My name is Robert Manis, M-A-N-I-S, College of Southern Nevada. And I want to thank the regents and the chancellor and the staff for allowing us the public comment. I was very, very pleased to hear a number of the things that were said today, all the benefits that have been our students have been achieving, the new buildings that we're building. One of the things I think, unfortunately, that was left out is the faculty that have made this happen and how much we have how much we owe to those faculty and how little they have gotten in return. You probably all know that we are nearing the completion of a long bargaining process at CSN, 3.5 years. We've gone through 3 college presidents, 3 chancellors. But it's not simply the turnover that was the problem here. The previous administration had adopted a scorched earth policy that wouldn't even agree to a non-discrimination clause for a year, as many of you know. In fact, every single administration movement was done under duress, either direct pressure from the legislators and finally the fact finder. Bargaining, they've refused to, in the past, bargain on mandatory topics, illegally regressed on in bargaining. And many times have come to the regents individually, and they were appalled at the tactics that were being used, but nothing was ever done. I know we have a lot of new regents and that have not been through this process, but I hope we all have learned something from this. The regents are going to need to build coalitions to do what is right. And if an administration or even the chancellor is doing something that's not defensible, the regents need to stand together and say no. ANSI is coming up to an election, a vote in the fall. And she needs to survive if we want to have academic independence. You need to reach out to the faculty. We need to approve the contract when it comes to you, and we need to go further. We need to let the faculty know that they are appreciated. And we need to know, we need to stand together to try to save ANSI if that is possible. Thank you, and I appreciate the chance to talk to you, and I appreciate your service.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Adrian Havis. I'm professor of CSN. I'm also president of the Nevada Faculty Alliance. And I'm speaking not for the State Alliance today, but for my brothers and sisters at CSN. And I want to note that we are, as my colleague has mentioned, completing collective bargaining. And hopefully we'll be submitting in the next several weeks a package that you should find acceptable. Wanted to thank our College President Dr. Zaragoza for his cooperation in this matter and other CSN faculty. The process, I should say, has gone on too long, as my colleague mentioned, 3.5 years and counting, which unfortunately put faculty in an unreasonable position by previous administration and to a certain degree by ANSI, but we won't dwell on the past too much. I think that we want to look forward. I do agree ANSI needs to do better, and I tend to be one that thinks that our faculty and our administrations are served by having an intermediary administration, an intermediary bureaucracy, if you will, separating us from the turbulence of politics, call it that. So, but I do believe ANSI needs to do better. I would read you something from the Nevada Current of about 2 years ago, November 2018. I'll just share this quote. Since the recession, cost of living adjustments and merit-based pay have been inconsistent for NGE employees, even as the private sector has enjoyed a healthy bounce back. And it goes on. In addition to concerns about stagnant salaries, faculty groups and individuals testified their health benefits haven't kept pace with rising costs, and they're expected to do more with less. I would note that the word is that currently rates for actuaries for fiscal year 2021 at PEP Board are coming in high and will likely blow through the excess reserves and require increased employee minimum increases that could be from $15 to $100 per month. So I want to bring these to your attention. You're probably aware of some of these things. I've gone over my time. I appreciate your forbearance today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We will now go to item number 4, Regents Welcome, Introductions and Reports. Do any regents have any comments? Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the pleasure of serving on the Lieutenant Governor's Census 2020 Education Subcommittee, and because students are traditionally one of the hardest populations to count. And I was extremely proud of the cooperation of throughout all of our institutions, all over the state, doing things to make sure that we can get an accurate count as possible.
Thank you. Regent McAdoo.
Yes, I just wanted to acknowledge Danny Chandler, who has been serving us for 30 years today, right over here. Here she is. Let's applaud her. Thank you.
Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to commend Nevada State College and College of Southern Nevada on their partnership for transportation. We need to put students first, and this program really did that. They saw a need in our community and worked together to try to solve that. So I appreciate what you've both done. I also want to say thank you to Anthony Ruiz for his leadership on this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no others, we'll go to item number 5, Chair of the Nevada Student Alliance Report, Nicola.
Thank you, guys, and good afternoon. So before I get into the business of what we discussed in our meeting, I do want to genuinely thank all of you guys for all the support in listening to us students and our, you know, my constituents behind me. For most of us, it is our last Board of Regents meeting, so we are sad to go, but also a little excited. We don't have to go through this all the time anymore. No, but I truly do value this opportunity that I was given, and I really do appreciate all the support from, like, the regents, the chancellors, all of the NGE presidents who always say hi and give me hugs all the time, and it's really nice to... You guys have become mentors to a lot of us, and I really do want to say thank you to you all for giving us this opportunity to serve our students. All right, now this morning, we had our NSA meeting at 7 a.m. again, which is always fun for us, but because we love higher ed and doing this so much, we decided to meet again in April to vote on legislative priorities within the NSA and to provide recommendations for the incoming board. So each of us are working on transition of our SGAs in our own institutions, and we all have exciting events going on. So it's very, you know, it's fun. We're in our, like, final term as president, so it's really nice to get all this work going. I would also like to say thank you to CSN and Nevada State College for providing the shuttle service for our students. I have heard a lot of really good feedback already, and I'm so happy to hear that it's growing and students are actually aware of what's going on our campus. This was a problem about a year ago where they got this brought up, and I'm happy to finally see it come into fruition and students actually utilizing the services. But again, I do want to thank you guys for everything that you guys have done for us. And, you know, I'm not going to get to you right now, but I might later if you guys come talk to me. But thank you guys for everything.
Thank you. We'll go to item number 6, the Classified Staff Council Report. Connie.
Hi, my name is Connie Jo Harris. And I'm a spokesperson for the NGE Classified Council. I also serve on the CSN Classified Council. In addition to these roles, I'm a CSN alumni and a part-time instructor at CSN. Thank you, Chair Geddes and other members of the Board Regents for recognizing the important role of classified staff and the NGE Classified Council. NGE Classified Council is honored to take our seat at the table and share a unified voice. NGE Classified Council bylaws. They have been drafted and are pending approval by the institutional representatives. We will make those available once they have been officially voted on and adopted. Elections will take place and officers will be announced at that time. Collective bargaining. We are continuing to monitor and report on collective bargaining and organizing efforts. On February 26, 2020, AFSCME, A-F-S-C-M-E, received certification as the exclusive representative of the State of Nevada Labor, Maintenance, and Custodial Unit. AFSCME organizers will now focus their attention on the administrative and professional unit. We are engaged in discussions and fact gathering about the differences in educational grant and aid between faculty and classified staff and their spouses and dependents. The discussion includes the current prospective status of grant and aid for emeritus faculty and retired classified across NSHE institutions. We recognize and applaud the institutions which now include grant and aid for their classified dependents. We're very grateful for that. We are working with leadership at our respective institutions to explore the impacts of establishing equality of educational benefits between those faculty dependents and classified staff dependents. Specifically, we are referring to the ability for classified staff dependents to attend any NSHE institution, mirroring the faculty benefit at all NSHE institutions per the Board of Regents Handbook, Title 4, Chapter 4, Section 11. We are encouraging all institutions to explore implementation of retired classified staff programs to include grant and aid that matches what is currently awarded to emeritus faculty. We believe this additional benefit will serve as an incentive toward continued excellence in service through the later years of classified employment. The TMCC Classified Council is leading this charge and has begun discussions with President Karen Hilgerson. AJR 5. The Classified Council will work to share information regarding the bill with all classified staff with the goal of encouraging them to be informed voters, and we will encourage all classified staff groups to include this information in their respective meetings and agendas. Board of Regents Classified Employee of the Year Award. The NSHE Classified Council will submit a proposal for establishing a Board of Regents Classified Employee of the Year throughout all of the institutions. This award would provide the Board of Regents an opportunity to recognize and reward hardworking, dedicated staff system-wide. Once again, we thank you for the opportunity to represent the NSHE Classified Council.
Thank you. We will now go to item 7, Chair of the Faculty Senate Chair's Report. Brian.
Hi. For the record, Brian Frost, Faculty Senate Chair, University of Nevada, Reno, and Chair of the Council of Chairs. On behalf of the Senate Chair, I would like to begin by thanking each member of the Board of Regents for your time and service to our institutions. We appreciate you putting yourselves in the public eye and for your advocacy for higher education and the difference we can make in the lives of our students and our state. We'd also like to acknowledge the work put in by the presidents, faculty, staff, and students across the Nevada system of higher education, elevating our institutions and the state. The Board of Regents and the presidents are the public face of our system, and your actions and decisions have significant impact on our institutions, and we'd ask you to keep that in mind. We appreciate the recent letter from Chair Geddes and Vice Chair DeBrava addressing diversity, equity, and inclusion. We acknowledge the work the system and our institutions have done to make our campuses not just more diverse, but more inclusive and equitable. We still have significant work to do. And if you've not yet read the recent resolution on diversity, equity, and inclusion from the Faculty Senate at TMCC, I would encourage you to do so. We're in the midst of significant changes across our system. And with that, there's consternation and concern that in less than 6 months, we'll have a new chancellor and presidents at both universities. The anxiety is amplified when we look at the outstanding work done by Chancellor Riley, President Miana, and President Johnson. The three of you will be sorely missed. And the system will be very fortunate indeed if we're able to find candidates with the same level of dedication to our institutions and who also share the value you all put on shared governance. So thank you all. As some of you know, I've pushed for the inclusion of a small group of campus leaders to work with the chancellor and search firm in our open searches for president and chancellor. The hiring of a president is a scary and nerve-wracking time on our campuses, and the limited input prior to a few finalists being brought onto campus runs the risk of disenfranchising members of the campus community before a new president even steps foot on campus. I hope this body will consider modifying how searches are carried out going forward. Incorporation of additional people early on in the process could provide some critical transparency. Regardless, the Senate chairs are hopeful that the next chancellor and the new and current presidents will continue to value, encourage, and support shared governance throughout the Nevada system of higher education. We very much appreciate the willingness of this board, Chancellor Riley, Vice Chancellor Abba, and others throughout NG to work with the Senate chairs to come up with policies that can work for our institutions and the faculty. That said, we also do value the differences between our institutions. You know, each one of us is unique, each institution is unique, and that needs to be respected. You know, we're all not the same, and that's okay. The next legislative session is going to be critical for our institutions. It's an opportunity for the governor to place his mark on higher ed in our state, and we need to convince him that that mark should be driving us forward to new heights. We're interested in the presentations later at this meeting from the presidents regarding the budget priorities of each institution, and we commend the chancellor for working to develop areas where the institutions have overlap. We are stronger going to the legislature together. We're pleased that DRI, UNR, and UNLV have been working together with MARCOM teams to develop how best to highlight the importance of research to our state. And we're also delighted to see the workforce development as a critical area, and I would stress that every institution across our state is involved in workforce development. The implementation of COREC is a huge lift for institutions and the faculty, and significant strides have been made, as we heard earlier in the committee. And we're very appreciative of the efforts to find funding to help cover the costs of the COREC changes. This is critically important as these changes, like many things, come with a cost. Finally, the Council of Chairs would like to thank the Chancellor and the Regents for initiating and supporting the Performance Pay Task Force. We appreciate the time and efforts of Vice Chancellor Abba, CFO Klinger, Task Force Chair Regent Carvello, Regents Del Carlo, Lieberman, Moran, and McMichael, as well as the faculty, students, and administrators who took part in the process. We're optimistic and believe that this is the closest we've been in 12 years to bring performance pay back to our institutions and helping fix our broken compensation system. This is an important step forward, and I appreciate the board's consideration of the recommendations that will be presented later at the meeting. Thank you all again for your time and your dedication to our institutions in the state of Nevada.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 8, the Chancellor's Report. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. A couple things. One is yesterday we received a visit from the chair of the LVEGA asking for our participation with him as they develop a educational technology summit in Las Vegas that will occur sometime either in the spring or the summer. And so we're looking forward to participating with that body and other local leaders and statewide leaders on this important topic. Over the last couple of months, we've had a series of student forums with veteran students, with undocumented students, with student athletes. And, you know, in addition to the really compelling and moving stories that our students have, one theme that came out was the appreciation they have for the dedication of our faculty and staff in mentoring them and moving them forward. There's a common theme that we heard that was very heartfelt. And it's great to hear. I really appreciate the Regents have come out there to some of these forums and hear some of the voices of our students. Continuing with that theme of student voices, we had our first presentation before the Legislative Commission on Education a week ago, addressed some of the issues around co-requisite, but a specific request they had was to address and cover our scholarship programs, the Millennial, the Nevada Promise, the Silver State. And what we did is we did a fact sheet. Instead, we had students do the presentation. So we said, we're not going to present. We have fact sheets here. We want our students to present. And I think everybody there and the comments we received back from legislators, it was very much appreciated. And I think that's the utilization of our students in more of those presentations is something we need to incorporate as we present our budgets to the legislature. As been previously mentioned, and I sent out some information as the governor works to build his budget and some of the work that he's doing on a strategic plan focused on various different aspects in the state of Nevada. Most recently, he has included me on his cabinet, and I can say that has been very welcome. He's been very inclusive of NCHE being at the table. And as he builds his budget, he's identified 6 to 7 areas of focus areas. Two of those ENCHI I'm part of, dealing one with elevating education, and the second one focus on workforce issues. These are key because the strategies that are developed in these sub-cabinets will be incorporated in the budget. So it really gives us an excellent opportunity to ensure that we're getting our issues at the table and part of that. And as I said, we couldn't have been more welcoming and inclusive in these discussions. And hopefully in the future that the next chancellor continues on the cabinet, because I think that is very important for ENCHI. We've started the new process of our presidential evaluations. This board adopted some significant changes to that. Namely, we worked with our faculty and presidents to revise that process to make it more transparent, to make it more efficient, and also to make it more humane. We have instituted a facilitator role that we've developed from our own institutions, as well as a standardized survey that's administered, outside persons from an expert from UNLV on survey research. But having participated in those initial committee meetings with the evaluation committees from TMCC, CSN, and Western Nevada College, I think we're definitely going on the right track. I think everybody said this is more consistent. It's flowing much smoother, and I'm looking forward to bringing those evaluations to this board at the June meeting. As you know, that we'll be sorely missing another leader, President Patterson. He was actually scheduled for his evaluation, too. Obviously, we wouldn't be continuing with that, and there'll be more to come about dealing with that transition. Lastly, if I can just give an update, too, on the searches that we have. We mentioned we're dealing with three searches, and March and April is a very busy time for interviews and kind of narrowing down those candidates. For the UNLV search, a meeting did occur with our search firm, an in-person meeting to identify the candidates that they brought forward and narrowing down candidates for semi-interviews. The search netted 77 interested parties or resumes that came in of interest for the president of UNLV. The search firm identified 29 individuals that they thought were appropriate to move forward. Of that 29, 6 actually dropped out before presenting to us, 5 of them citing confidentiality issues and concern about publicly having their name out there. But we were presented with 23 applicants. 10 were chosen for the semifinalists for video interviews that will occur this Monday and Tuesday, the 9th and 10th. I can say of those 10, every one of them that were selected were from R1 institutions. It was across the board that those individuals that came in for the semifinalists. Of that pool, 40% are from an ethnic group. 2 of the 10 are women. 1 is a dean. 2 are vice president. And the remaining 7 are either presidents or provosts. I think we have a rich pool at this point. We'll see how the interviews go, but I don't think there'll be any question that we'll have a robust pool of finalists to choose from. The candidates, the search for the chancellor position this Wednesday, next Wednesday, we will be meeting with the search firm, myself along with Chairwoman Del Carlo, Chair Geddes, and Dean Gould will meet with the search firm to narrow down the applicants that they are forwarding. There's 30 plus. There's still a couple of candidates that they're engaged in conversations are, so we don't have the final number there. But we have 30-plus individuals that we will be discussing Wednesday to bring in candidates on March 23rd and March 24th for video interviews. Don't know much more about the statistics on that. As soon as I get those, I'll share them with the board and others. The UNR search, is just kind of in its throes. We don't have any statistics on that, but the indication is that there have been receiving quite a few phone calls for that position and a lot of interest from individuals across the United States. We will be meeting April 1st with Chair Trachak and the search firm and Chief Counsel Dean Gould to go over and identify from that pool of candidates that we have a semi-finalist interview. And I think that kind of wraps up my rather lengthy report. Thanks.
Thank you. We will go to item number 9, the board chair's report. I just have a few items. One, I've been meeting on the campuses to talk about free speech and the climate on campuses and try to get a better understanding of some of the issues out there. Been meeting with legislators just in advance of session, finding out what their issues are. And after our budget discussion tomorrow, we get more direction from the board. We'll refine those conversations. Have been meeting with faculty, staff, and students on the searches and other board items to help them all better understand the process. And I did want to acknowledge Regent, although most people call him Mayor, Bob Cashel, was on the Board of Regents from 1979 to 82 when he got elected Lieutenant Governor, and he passed away February 11th. If you want to know more about Regent Cashel, we have a resolution up on the website that talks about his many accomplishments. And then I want to turn it over briefly to Vice Chair Dubrava to give us an update on the COVID-19 as he represented us with the governor.
Thanks, Chair Geddes. Governor Sisolak convened a briefing last week, that was Friday, February 28th, of state agencies, and I attended along with General Counsel Joe Reynolds, and we shared information amongst the State Laboratory for the State of Nevada and the Health District, Southern Nevada Health District and Washoe County Health District, and basically it was just along the governor's theme is, you know, prepare, not panic, for this virus that is, it's here, as we found out today in Southern Nevada, and communicated with that panel that with Chancellor Riley's support, the institution presidents have communicated with their students and staff, and everyone's safety is paramount, and just reminded about basic hygiene, and, you know, if you feel sick, don't show up to class. You know, if you're going to cough or sneeze or use proper hand washing techniques. And maybe the latest development is, Chancellor Riley, if you just want to mention about your first response or your new task force.
Sure. We had a meeting with the Council of Presidents yesterday and agreed to form an internal task force made up to be led by Chief Counsel Joe Reynolds, as well as some of our staff from the Institute Administration and a representative from each of the institutions. I can say that our presidents, you know, are vigilant about this. They have plans in place. They're in communication with local governments. I think we're in good hands as far as following stuff, but we want to make sure just internally that we're communicating consistently and we're receiving information. So we've identified those members and have kind of officially, well, informally formed our internal task force. Thanks.
Thank you. With that, we will go to item number 10, the appeal of employment action taken by UNLV with respect to John Centineo. And I'll turn it over to Deputy General Counsel James Martinez.
Good afternoon. Deputy General Counsel James Martinez, for the record, this is an appeal filed by John Centineo of an employment action taken against him by UNLV. The Board of Regents Handbook Title II, Chapter 6, otherwise known as the Code, sets forth the disciplinary procedures for faculty. As a general rule, the code allows the president to be the final decision maker when it comes to employment decisions, but in the cases of termination for cause, it allows the appeal to the Board of Regents. Mr. Centineo's employment was terminated by President Miana on the recommendation of a special hearing committee, and Mr. Centineo timely filed this appeal. Pursuant to Nevada open meeting law, the board is allowed to enter into closed sessions to consider the character, alleged misconduct, professional competence, or the physical or mental health of a person. The charges that led to Mr. Centineo's termination involve such considerations, and in a few moments we'll be moving into a closed session after a motion to hear his appeal. No action may be taken in the closed session. When the closed session concludes, we will reconvene in the open session to decide the appeal. Notice has been provided to Mr. Centennio per NRS 241, and I'm submitting a copy of the notice for the record. And I'd also like to mention that we were just notified that he is represented by counsel, Mr. Michael Balaban, who I would just ask the chair to include in the list of individuals permitted to attend the closed hearing.
Thank you. At this time, I ask members of the board if anyone has a conflict of interest that would prevent them from participating in the appeal, or if they have any reason to recuse themselves from this matter. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to move into closed session under NRS 241.030, 241.033, and 241.034 to hear the appeal of Mr. Centennial's termination of employment by UNLV.
I'll second.
So move from Regent Hayes, second from Regent McAdoo. The closed session will be held in this room pursuant to NRS 241.033, subparagraph 5. I authorize the following people to attend the closed session: Tom Riley, Chancellor; James Martinez, Deputy General Counsel; Joe Reynolds, Chief General Counsel; Dr. Marta Miana, UNLV President; Veronica Hall, Administrative Code Officer for UNLV; Elda Sidhu, General Counsel for UNLV; Linda King, Assistant General Counsel, UNLV; Dean Gould, Board Counsel; Angela Palmer, Board Staff; and from SES, Danny Chandler and Claudio Osnaga, as well as Michael Billabon, representing the appellate. With that, all in favor signify by saying aye. All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously with one absent. And I ask you all to clear the room, and then we will let you know when it is over. And just for the regents, it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to get the video set up, so take a break. We will reconvene this meeting of the Board of Regents at item 10.3 in open session. Mr. Martinez.
James Martinez, Deputy General Counsel, for the record. Pursuant to NRS 241, the board just conducted a closed session to hear arguments on the appeal submitted by John Centennio. Now is the time for the board to decide the appeal. Pursuant to NC Code 6.13.2D, the board may take any of the following actions. Number one, dismiss the charge, which would overturn Mr. Centennio's termination. Number two, affirm the charge, which would uphold Mr. Centennio's termination. Number three, impose a lesser sanction. Or number four, order a new hearing. Please keep in mind that in the course of discussing this matter and taking action, the board should not discuss any confidential facts learned in the closed session.
With that, at this time, I'll entertain a motion consistent with four options authorized by Section 6.13.2D of the Code. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion to choose option number two of affirm the decision of the institution.
I have a second from Regent Dubrava. Any questions or comments on the motion?
I have a quick question, Mr. Chairman.
Regent Moran.
Yes, and maybe it's just a question of our counsel, Mr. Martinez. The question is, I just want to make sure that we've given the gentleman, I mean, again, this is just procedural. This is not a factual issue, so we can discuss the procedural aspects of our policies and procedures in public. Just procedurally, do we give this gentleman all of the due process that the code puts out there? I mean, in terms of just how this thing went down from him submitting his request to him being censured to him appealing to him hiring his lawyer. I mean, were we able to afford him the due process that our regs would afford? I mean, I just want that confirmed that we followed all of the legal paths.
Mr. Martinez?
We heard from counsel on both sides, and I would defer to the Administrative Code Officer, Veronica Hall, in terms of the procedural arguments that she previously made for what happened at the institution level. But I can speak for the due process that happened in this appeal. We have afforded all due process.
Okay, so the follow-up question, Mr. Chairman, of Mr. Martinez is, so if opposing counsel on one side or the other, whether it's the appellant or it's the university, what is the next step? I mean, where does that appeal go from there? Is that a district court writ? Is it? I mean, where are we at with that?
So this would be final action. There's no additional appeals as administrative remedies. After this step, Mr. Centennial has exhausted his administrative remedies and is free to take the next step for judicial action if he chooses.
Which would be going to the district court. Okay. So again, I want to support the motion, but I want to make sure that we believe that we gave him due process, number one. But number two, I want to make sure that if we did not give him due process, and again, maybe this is just put out there into the space for the other regions to consider, and the chairman, of course, is would it make sense to give the gentleman an opportunity? I think I heard that possibly there was an opportunity. One of the three alternatives that we have is to possibly give him another hearing for him to present his evidence, because it seems like from a procedural standpoint, that's one of the legal issues that he's putting forth. So my question would be, would there be a flavor for the board to possibly consider giving him that if, in fact, we believe that that he hasn't received to the fullest extent his due process under our code?
I would say we have a motion and a second to uphold it, and if that motion fails, then we could consider the other options.
Okay.
Any other questions? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Before we vote, could you repeat what the motion was with the choice that was given of the four?
Chief of Staff Gould.
Yes, Regent Del Carlo, the motion was to affirm UNLV's decision, President Miana's decision to terminate.
Seeing no other questions or comments, may we have a roll call vote?
Regent McAdoo.
I vote yes. Affirm it.
Regent McMichael.
Affirm.
Regent Moran. Affirm. Regent Page is not here. Regent Perkins.
Affirm.
Regent Trachuk.
No.
You vote no? Just want to make sure. Okay.
Correct.
Regent Carter. Regent Carvalho.
Affirm.
Regent Del Carlo. Affirm. Vice Chair Dubrava.
Affirm.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Lieberman. Motion passes.
Thank you. We will now go on to item number 11, consent items. And so the board knows item 11C has been withdrawn and is not on the consent. Or on this agenda at all for this meeting. So with that, do I have a motion to approve the consented agenda, or does anybody want to pull any items to approve it without 11C? Motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent Del Carlo. Questions or comments on the consent? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously, with Regent Page not here. And I would like to say congratulations to all the faculty who just got tenure. I know we do it quickly and we have it on consent, but every one of them worked very hard over many years to earn that. And we are very proud of all the work that they do. We will now go to item number 12, Distinguished Nevadan Awards. The board will consider approval of the following nominations for 2020 Distinguished Nevadan Awards, starting first with Ms. Bartlett, Regent Carter.
Sure. I nominated Tema Bartlett. I'll just kind of run through some of this here. She was the bank manager at Henderson Bank of Nevada, was instrumental in doing a lot of stuff for our community, was the National Association of Bank President from 1958 through 60, and she also taught at Clark County Community College from 1979 to 82. She's contributed in higher education both to Nevada State and to UNLV. She helped found Nevada State College and set up scholarships there as well. They also helped found the hospital system now known as St. Rose. here in Nevada. She's a Palladium member of the UNLV Foundation, has also donated to the engineering program, and had a school named after her in 1992, the Selma F. Bartlett Elementary School.
Thank you. I should have said this before, but as you're all aware, these awards will be giving out at commencement in the spring. So today we're voting on approving them, and then in the spring we will bring them all in so they can be recognized in front of everyone and have their names engraved in stone. With that, we'll go to Mr. Dolan, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Mr. Dolan came to UNR. He followed his brother to go to school, and he ended up staying, falling in love with the Reno community. He came from very humble beginnings, and education was his way to make his life better. He met friends at school and ended up in the dealership business, but he started very humbly as a kid, sweeping floors, doing all those kinds of menial things. But over the course of his life, he has been a very, very successful businessman in the Reno area, but he's been a quiet philanthropist. He's an extremely humble person. I mean, he was amazingly overwhelmed when I called him about this award. I mean, it almost brought tears to my eyes. He was so humble about it, and he's given not only to UNR and athletics, but all over Reno. It's all in the bio, and I got a call from his executive assistant yesterday, and she said, I know your meeting's tomorrow. I just want you to know today they're naming a building after him at the renowned campus in South Reno. It's the Thomas S. Dolan Pulmonary Rehabilitation Building. That happened yesterday. And he got involved with the Lung Association way before he was diagnosed with fibrosis, I think that's what it's called. And anyway, he's just a very deserving and truly a humble man, the kind of person you want to honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Ms. Batcher, and she was my nomination. If you don't know Ms. Batcher, she was Vice President at Caesars Entertainment. She was the Chief of Staff for Governor Kenny Gwynn. She was Chief of Staff for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. She was in charge of the California Department of Motor Vehicles until her recent switch to be the Chairwoman of the California Public Utilities Commission. She has given a lot to Nevada and to our country, and I'm proud to nominate her. With that, we'll go to Justice Cherry, Regent Lieberman.
Southern Nevada, 4 years.
We have it in writing. Thank you, Regent Lieberman. Now we will go to Mayor Goodman, Regent McMichael.
Yes, there's not much you can say about Mayor Goodman other than he's probably the happiest mayor in the universe as he was elected. And I was kind of taken aback that he hadn't been nominated before now. He has been one of the most colorful characters here in Las Vegas, and I would like to see that his name is engraved in stone here in Las Vegas because he is a Nevadan.
Thank you. The board did make two nominations as the entire board, and we've asked two regents to represent those people today as well as at the commencement ceremonies. The first is Senator Reed from Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really appreciate that one, actually. That hits directly home for me. Obviously, we all know the senator and the majority leader. You know, he probably has one of the finest and nicest wife and human being that I know, Landra, and obviously has an incredibly beautiful family as well. We all also know his undying commitment to the state of Nevada and everything that has happened as a result of his hard work and
stick-to-it-ness and really being true to what Nevada is all about. I mean, too much to cover at this moment. His service to the country and making it safe and secure are just trailblazing. His coming from very humble beginnings in Searchlight Nevada and rising to essentially the most powerful position in Washington, D.C., in my mind, is remarkable and certainly admirable, and goes to show that anyone can do it with an education, hard work, and solid integrity. But, Mr. Chairman, if I can just say a few things, and obviously I'll have an opportunity, obviously, to present down the road. But I first worked with the majority leader in D.C. in 91 through 1993. I worked as one of his executive and legislative interns. I worked in the Hart Building, actually, on Capitol Hill with the senator. And the interesting thing about it is he probably has more to say about me than I have to say about him as it relates to that experience. And I'm invoking the attorney-client privilege, so to speak, on the things that he gets to say about me. In any event, the other thing just to touch on is that maybe some of you all don't know, maybe you do know, but the majority leader's public career included serving and being elected as a lieutenant governor. He also served as an appointee and the chair to the Nevada Gaming Commission, and then, of course, his role on the U.S. Senate as the majority leader. Finally, the majority leader was a very, very big supporter of law enforcement, and I am obviously a big supporter of law enforcement. My grandfather actually served very closely with Senator Reid. As he and his political career moved forward, my grandfather served as the sheriff of Clark County here from 1982 until 1996 when he retired and then passed away several years later. But some of you may not know this, but Senator Reid actually served and was a police officer in Washington, D.C. on the Capitol Police Department, which I think is pretty cool. The last thing that I was going to suggest, too, about Senator Reid and why he makes such a great candidate for this Distinguished Nevadan Award is that he really is a true fighter, a true fighter for what's right, a true fighter for education, a true fighter for growth, and obviously he is definitely a true fighter for Nevada to the core. But even more interesting than that, he was actually a real fighter. His coach was actually our former governor, Mike O'Callaghan, was his coach, boxing coach. And I remember many, many years ago, before Governor O'Callaghan passed away, I remember sitting in conversation and listening to him talk about Senator Reid having the, I think the best quote would be, having the best overhand left that he had ever seen of any boxer. So in any event, I wouldn't want to be on the other side of that physical fight with Senator Reid. But anyway, on behalf of the board, I mean, it really does give me the greatest pleasure and honor to be able to select him, speak to him and about him. And I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. I look forward to doing that for you and for the rest of the board.
Thank you. We will go to the other board nomination, Mr. Stoldall. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've got the materials in front of you. I'll just give a brief synopsis. You know, Bob Stoldall is a Las Vegas high school alum, a UNLV alum, former editor of the Rebel Yell, and then had a, depending on how you count his career, if it started when he was sweeping floors at the RJ when he was in high school or after he graduated college, he had between a 40 and 50-year career in the media, primarily here in Southern Nevada, rising to the highest ranks of television at two local network affiliates, and then in his retirement now serves as the chairman of the board of the Nevada State Museum and Historical Society, as well as serving on boards of at least three other historical preservation groups here in Nevada. While he's not a native, he moved here in high school and has been a proud Nevadan and served and given back to our state ever since. So I'm proud to present to you the nomination of Bob Stoldall.
Thank you. And the last candidate we have is Mr.
LaRood. You can see his notes in here. Regent Page nominated him, and he's been a longtime fixture at the School of Journalism in Reno. So with that, do I have a motion to approve the Distinguished Nevadans? Motion from Regent Carter, second from Regent Del Carlo. Any questions or comments? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations to all. We look forward to honoring them. Just so you're all aware, we are going to be pulling some items forward to today to try and shorten tomorrow where it's appropriate, and we'll just squeeze those in as we can. We'll probably go a little past 5, depending on where we end up here. So now we're going to item 13, Regents Scholar Awards. The board will consider approval of the following nominations for the 2020 Regents Scholar Awards. You can see the list there in the agenda item. Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Carvalho, second from Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. And you all will be receiving a list as far as when we're handing out these awards in the spring. And if you have the opportunity to attend those events or the opportunity to hand those out on the board's behalf, it would be much appreciated. We will go to item number 14, honorary degrees. We will consider the following nominations for honorary degrees. We'll start with Mr. Cooper, President Zaragoza.
Mr. Chairman, Regents, Federico Zaragoza for the record. I respectfully request authorization for CSN to award Mr. Jeffrey Cooper an honorary associate's degree at our CSN 2020 commencement ceremony. Jeffrey Cooper has served as a trustee on the CSN Foundation Board for more than 10 years. During that period, Mr. Cooper has been one of our most effective philanthropic champions and is a member of the CSN Foundation Executive Committee. Jeff is committed to the principles of educational access and equity, regardless of zip code. He was critical in helping CSN raise the $6 million match required for a health and science building. During an 18-month period, Jeff worked with the CSN Foundation, the Engelstad family, and helped to secure new donors needed to meet our $6 million campaign target. As a result of his work, CSN did meet its target and did not have to infuse any of its institutional funds to meet the match requirements. Thanks to Jeff's tireless effort, the CSN Foundation is making amazing progress in the donor community. We hope that you will agree that Mr. Jeffrey Cooper is deserving of the proposed CSN recognition. Thank you, and please note that additional materials are included in your board package for the reference if necessary.
Thank you, and for Senator Reed, President Miana.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Regent Moran has already done very nice homage to Senator Reed, but I will just add a couple of more UNLV-specific things. It is my distinct honor to recommend Senator Harry Reed for an honorary doctorate based on his fierce and unwavering support of Nevada and of UNLV. He is renowned for tirelessly working to improve conditions in our state and for driving continued growth and development at UNLV in all areas. Particularly in research, he has supported and advocated for numerous grants and helped UNLV secure land for the UNLV Harry Reid Research and Technology Park, the Interdisciplinary Harry Reid Center, and the UNLV Harry Reid Silver State Research Award also bear his name. He is often seen around campus, and it's a joy. Senator Reid is a distinguished fellow in law and policy at UNLV's Boyd School of Law and at the MGM Resorts Public Policy Institute and the Greenspun College of Urban Affairs, which he co-founded. So with gratitude for his steadfast support of UNLV and decades of passionate leadership on behalf of Nevada and the nation, UNLV respectfully submits Senator Harry Reid for consideration for this honorary degree.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve the honorary degrees? Motion. Who is that? Thank you. Regent Lieberman, second from Regent Del Carlo. Any questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 15, Institutional Metrics, Nevada State College. Lame duck President Patterson.
Yeah, as I've been telling people, I'll be like a bad penny. 15 months is still a long time. So I'll try to move through this relatively quickly because I think it's self-explanatory. But then obviously I want to leave time for some questions about some of the data. And you should feel free to interrupt me if you want to ask those questions right away. So this is the opportunity to present annually where we are at as a college with respect to the board's primary objectives. Start with our mission. I'm sure you've read that. It's stayed fairly constant for about 4 years now. Vision statement, again, this is what we're trying to do. We want to be a model of teaching excellence. We want to be innovative in our student support. And we're an agent of economic growth and social justice. We have a very diverse student population that's very deserving of higher education and upward mobility. We have developed core values internally. These are not our external core values. This is what we live by as a faculty and staff. And you can see it's a mixture of kind of maybe like more introspective of ourselves, of who we want to be, but also those values that we hold dear in terms of being innovative and diversity being a core of what we view as our strength and always being in that upward kind of trajectory. So we obviously had a big year in the legislature, which was critical to our continued expansion. Overall, we had a 35% increase in our operating budget. Received funding for two new buildings, the Glenn Andy Christensen School of Education building, and then we're sharing with the College of Southern Nevada in the Engelstad School of Health Sciences building. And so we're thrilled to share in those buildings. We've had a great campaign thus far, and we're continuing to the end of at least the fiscal year. On the Teachers Now campaign, we're about three-quarters of the way to our goal of $12 million. We started our first master's in speech pathology. We already have 52 students enrolled in that. That makes it a fairly large non-business master's program in the state. And, of course, we've continued to expand our nursing program. We're now at 288 students and bachelors, and as I've just got the updated numbers, we're now near 400 students that are taking classes in the nationally recognized RN to BSN online program. We just had our first graduates, this last graduation, if you were there. Our first Deaf Studies students have graduated now from that program that just started 3 years ago. Student housing project, as I mentioned, it's online. It looks like it's going to be ready to go in the fall of 2020. And so we're excited about that. It's going to change the character of the campus yet again. We're a constantly evolving campus. As President Carol Harder said during my evaluation like 4 years ago, we're an aspirational institution. What we look like now will be nothing what we look like in 5 years. And I can assure you what we look like right now, with or without me, will be nothing like we look in another 5 years from now. We're a rapidly evolving institution. And we've been fortunate our faculty and staff have largely been able to keep up with the changes that are really occurring there. We value the culture in the campus. One of the things we're really proud about is that we have a good culture. Knock on wood, I was just commenting how we haven't had a single personnel lawsuit filed. I'm talking about filed in the 9 years that I've been president, or almost 9 years. It's just a remarkable kind of place. We have students that we don't have theft. We don't have reports. We don't have Clery Act reports, because even if things are left out, backpacks, cell phones, iPads, they don't get taken. And it's pretty remarkable. I hope it's always that way, because it's pretty amazing. We undertook a significant remodel of the Dawson building. We put a couple million dollars into that project to build 42 offices that were absolutely necessary and are all full. And now we're looking at, okay, where do we put the staff that we're hiring this year? That's just kind of where we're at in terms of our facilities. We opened the Raker building, the Student Success Center, and that is all full up again and has been kind of a remarkable thing for students to be able to go and get all of their services in one building. We've maintained the GRIP as the second fastest growing college in the country. We've grown at roughly a 30% two-year increase. Our five-year growth rate is 70% in unweighted student credit hours. So that tells you that we're on a pace to more than double in growth every 10 years. That would be a pace at 140%. And we've continued to become more diverse and higher achieving. Our average entering high school GPA is now 3.06. So there's the snapshot of the numbers. Our freshman classes steadily increasing. This last class was a 6% growth. The most amazing thing is they're now all full-time, 95% full-time. That's a complete turnaround from 4 years ago. Class diversity of that freshman class, still very diverse, 90% culturally diverse, almost 62% are Latinx, Hispanic. Transfer population this year is down a little bit, not unexpected with the Promise Scholarship, and nearly a quarter of the students are transferring in with over a 3.5 college GPA, mostly from College of Southern Nevada. Already mentioned the speech pathology program. So that's what will be our projection. We'll talk about that a bit more in the budget process as we roll forward, but it'll be about a 17% overall increase in weighted credit hour enrollments from the last count year. So talking about the first strategic goal, kind of talk a little bit about this slide. It's got a few interesting things in it. Gender stays the same, climbed a little bit in favor of women, 77% women, 23% men. Our ethnicity continues to grow. The freshman class, that's the first-year students, 63% lead that mark. If you look at academic load, again, full-time is the large part. So I think the really interesting thing here, and I'll talk about it a little bit more, is that top 10 high schools. So as you can see, starting in the upper right, East Career and Technical Academy is the highest at 19%. Las Vegas High next at 12. El Dorado at 10. We don't even get to a Henderson High School until fourth up. So the bulk of our growth has occurred in Central, East, and North Las Vegas, although we've had some growth in Henderson as well. Hence why the transportation issue is so important for Nevada State College and CSN, because these are students that are coming from those areas of town, which are still a remarkable distance from a public transportation standpoint, to come into the downtown corridor and then go back out to Nevada State. Here's a neat little zip code analysis of what's happened in the 8 years. So as you can see, the bulk of our enrollment was down in the south near Henderson, and now you can see with the big circles where it's coming into Central, East, and North Las Vegas. And that's how we've grown as an institution. Again, largely fueled by Hispanic students. There's a headcount enrollment. You can see just continuing to dramatically climb. We'll go over 6,000 students, I'm sure, this fall. And we're just going to continue to grow that number. There's our overall ethnicity report. So you can see we're now 72% from diverse populations, 28% white Caucasian. And this is a snapshot of the kind of the total enrollment. So this includes our transfer students, which have more white Caucasian students, so our overall balance shifts. But you can see our Hispanic population is steadily climbing, now 42%. It'll probably be 2 or 3 years, and then the Hispanic population will be actually the majority population at over 50%, based on the way we see the numbers continuing to grow. We've been really good about putting access to dollars into financial aid. We've always met at least the minimum target of 15%. Some years we've gone a little bit more than that. Some years we've dipped into donor funds and other funds in order to maintain high levels of financial aid. We have a low-income student population. We have a high percentage of Pell eligible. We have a lot of independent students. And financial aid is really key. So even though we're more than 40% lower than the universities in tuition and fee costs, it's still really important for us to provide that level of financial aid to our students. And things like the textbook program to reduce the cost even more are critically important. That tells you a little snapshot of where our financial aid dollars are going. So we've had obviously significant increases in the overall financial aid, up to $24.7 million now from all sources in financial aid. And you can see our amount of loans, despite our tremendous increase in student population, is down to $11.4 million. So we've actually declined in loans, even though our student population over that same time period has gone up exponentially. talking about a strategic goal of success. So we've had steadily improving metrics, and I really sometimes have to back up. This has been an emphasis of the board, which we really appreciate. This emphasis of the college started, back in 2012 when I came on board, not due to me specifically, but we had virtually no resources to spend on student programs. It was not until the recession started to improve and formula funding, they actually adopted a formula in the 2013 session before we actually got new funding to support all of the new students that had grown over that recession time period. So we immediately started putting that money back into student success programs in 2013 and into more faculty and student support positions, and now we're seeing the results of that. So when you start talking about a six-year graduation rate starting to dramatically climb, it's not something that we did last year. We're continuing to do things, but these are things we did 6 years ago in order to get that number to dramatically climb. Now, the retention rate is something that you can have more immediate impact, and you can see that in 5 years, we've moved up our retention rate 13% from 69% to 78%. 78% is actually a pretty high mark, pretty close to the university's levels in terms of retention first year to second year. Graduation rates are still low. They're at 21% now, but that's a 50% climb in 6 years. And those success rates are obviously increasing the number of credit hours, too, and the pressure on faculty and the pressure on space. So it's all the success leads to capacity issues, but we're happy to have them. That's where we want to be. Our overall graduation numbers have increased 52% in that same time frame. So we're now we'll pass over well over 600 students graduated with four-year degrees this year. That just shows you graphically kind of where retention rates have really started to climb from in just 1 year from 70 to 78. That's pretty remarkable, and that's going to continue to stay up there. We've got all the metrics in place to keep that high. Now, here's where there's some explanation needed about why we have these like dramatic jumps. So I mentioned this to the board before, particularly our Asian and Black or African American populations have pretty small cohorts, and because this is measured by first-time full-time students. And 6 years ago, that looks a lot different than it looks right now. Our first-time full-time cohorts now are 3 and 4 times the size as they were back then, and that's for all populations. So this is an example of where two or three students can make a huge difference in how these numbers go. But as you can see, from an equity standpoint, we've kind of flipped the scenario. In terms of one-year retention, our highest achieving population is Hispanic at 78%. Our Asian population is at 76%. I'm sorry, that's white. Caucasian is at 76%. And then at 75% is our Asian population. I'm mixing up because the colors are slightly off. Now I can see them. So the white Caucasian is at the bottom, 73%. That's the orange line. The red line is Black or African American. That's at 76%, so that's second. So right now, our white Caucasian first-year freshman population is trailing, but they're all pretty close. Those aren't dramatic differences, and given the size of the cohorts, I don't want to read too much in that. But that tells you that we're an institution that's doing well with all populations in terms of retention rates. Again, graduation totals steadily climbing. We'll have another big year this year. Now that you can see kind of how it's gone from a six-year graduation rate, first-time, full-time students. And so now from that fall 2000 cohort, which is the first cohort where we actually were focused more on student support and programmatic resources, you can see what a difference that's making now, up to 21% on that. And, you know, I always have to remind the board, too, that those classes back then are different than they are now, too, in terms of their selection of major and the levels of transfer out. So this class, for example, in fall of 2013 has, I think, a 40% transfer out. So that means that they didn't drop out. They went to school somewhere else. And one of the things we found that was so surprising is that almost twice as many students were going to CSN as they were going to UNLV. So they were actually going to the two-year college, either to get technical training or maybe in the ADN program because they didn't get into our nursing program, so they were following a different pathway. So we're going to get better at this of identifying students, the pathway that they're on, that we have a place for them, for example, in the nursing program, and that if this is really a place they should start as opposed to CSN, particularly with the Promise Scholarship availability. And there's a six-year graduation rate by ethnicity, and you can see bounces all over the map. So, it's hard to read this. Last year, African-American students were the highest six-year graduation rate. This year, they're the lowest. Again, small cohorts, two or three people are making all the difference in those numbers from back then. This will steady out as we have larger and larger freshman classes within different ethnicities. So in terms of closing the achievement gap, I want to talk about some of these programs that started. So you talk about NPONTLA. That's been our core program that was largely geared toward Hispanic students or oriented toward Hispanic students. So we've had students of all races go through that program. That shows you the dramatic difference that you can have in a one-year retention rate from having this bridge program and first-year peer cohort model. Here's an example of an impact of financial aid. So we have a program, it's the only one in Nevada that funds DACA and undocumented students with the U.S. Dream Scholarship. These are full scholarships. They're the only full scholarships that are offered. So you can see by having that full financial aid, you know, we're getting classes that are 100% retention, 95% retention. Almost no students drop out if they have the financial aid resources to make it. And then we've developed these a new program called Course Assistance that we've started to work with. And that's where we're really embedding upperclassmen into courses to help mentor students both in the coursework and working with faculty and financial aid and all these kind of concierge kind of things. And you can see that our retention rate, and I think the most remarkable thing here is the two-year retention rate. Look at that 20-point gap that if we just have those students helping their underclassmen, what a difference it can make for them to go not just from year one to year two, but from year two to year three. And that's what we're starting to focus on more as an institution, is less on the first year, although we still will look at that, but more on that second to third year and beyond to graduation. We're going to start a new program this summer that will be modeled after NPONTLA, and this program will be more focused on the African-American student experience and how we can help those students to be more consistently successful in college. And those are some of the elements that we'll add in, but ultimately we expect this program to be equally as successful as NPONTLA. In terms of workforce, this gives you a good snapshot of how we've stayed with primarily within our mission. School of Nursing, up to 254. That's going to grow exponentially. The base classes will now be 288 once those full cohorts start graduating. And then as these almost 400 students now start getting their RN to BSN, those numbers will start exponentially growing. We're going to start to get 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, 200 start to graduate with that RN to BSN degree. Education still stay, it's grown, but still stay kind of flat. This is where we are putting all of our attention, or a lot of our attention and resources, is to quadruple the size of that education program. We built these teachers' academies that we're proud of. There's nine of them now. The superintendent like them in every high school in Clark County. We've talked about them, putting them in northern Nevada as well, because this teacher shortage issue is across the state. It's not just in Clark County. The numbers are just higher in Clark County. And then you can see how our general liberal arts degrees, business, psychology, criminal justice, biology, to name a few, are all really good programs, and they're growing. There's kind of the straight line on how we're projecting by 2025 to be close to 800 graduating students. We won't be long before we're at the 1,000 mark. In terms of research, you know, we don't measure it so much as grants, although we, you know, have received a fair amount of grants, now about $1.2 million for our size of institution. But we do lots of student presentations, and so this kind of shows you that we're really trying to engage, like you saw this morning, with the CSN student and faculty member, hands-on research in the sciences, but also in education. We do these student presentations now and doing research in our education classes, in our nursing classes. They all present projects as well. And you can see how much we're growing. Those number of student presentations, we're continue to grow that because we think it's really important to have that experiential kind of experience. I already mentioned about the foundation. We had a record year last year. It's almost 1,000% increase over the year before. The other thing I want to highlight in this slide is just that we had a 36% increase in the number of first-time donors. And that's what's going to build your base over time. And, of course, we had an unqualified audit, which we appreciate. This is my last slide to just talk about some of the challenges that we face. I've mentioned this many times in public, mentioned it again to the board. We have rapidly changing workforce skill requirements. We're now preparing students for jobs that don't exist. It's a big challenge. It's something that all of the state, and I think the effort that the chancellor talked about with the Las Vegas Global Economic Alliance is a good start. All of the state needs to be thinking about how does higher education mesh with business, and how do we make sure that we're teaching the skills that are going to help somebody in a career, not just in a particular job. Because, again, those jobs are going to change so rapidly, students are going to have to need that adaptability and the essential skills of communication, teamwork, interdisciplinary kind of collaborations, analytical skills, verbal and written skills. All of those things will, paired with technical and skill-based education, are the things that are going to really have students thrive in a new environment that's going to constantly change. Lack of space, which I'll talk about tomorrow, is a critical issue for the college. On this growth rate of doubling in size every 8 to 10 years, there's no way the state's going to keep up with that kind of infrastructure. And so all of us have got to figure out, not just for Nevada State, but the whole of the system, how are we going to build more facilities with such a lack of state resources that can meet what was typically the way you build a building, which is the state funded the primary part of it. And then you kicked in what you could on the donor side of things. I've mentioned transportation. We're going to continue to look at that pilot and how that works. We're implementing the new admissions policy. Our applications below a 2.5 are dramatically down because that's been messaged well with the high schools. But we still have some students that are applying in. And per the board policy that was approved, we may admit those students, but subject to certain requirements they'll have to meet in terms of supplemental support in order to come in and be more successful. We have a big challenge. It's not a challenge. The city of Henderson has been our great partner. We really need to start moving on developing the Nevada State land and the 120 acres that the Henderson has in front of it, because the Henderson land is the front entrance to the college. So how that builds out is really important to us in creating a long-term, beautiful, inviting campus. And they've been a good partner, but we'll be working on that this year. And, of course, I've already mentioned this. How do we maintain a close-knit family culture with rapid expansion? And we are intent on continuing to build out fully online education programs. So that's the presentation. I'll take questions. Did I do okay?
Regent Carvalho.
President Patterson, can you just what is the significance of the name of the this new Summer Bridge program? Is it pronounced Sankofa?
I think so, and it's based on an African heritage, and I think it's a term that is means family. Family? Yeah, please.
So it's based on, it's a name called Sankofa. It's supposed to kind of rise above it all. It's from a tribe in Ghana.
Thank you. Good question.
Just somewhat of a follow-up on that. As far as the NAPLANTA and the new program, do you have enough resources so that anybody who wants in those programs are in it, or is it a limited cohort?
They're limited cohorts. We've grown NAPLANTA to, I think we're now at 40 students from originally 20. That is heavily donor-funded by the Rogers Foundation. This new program, we're looking at some donor resources to help it get started. But what we're trying to look at in terms of investment in these kinds of programs is a couple of things. First of all, we're using our data from this to develop other programs. For example, the course assistant program and a new program that we started, a peer support program, are based on things that we know are working in there. So they're not a full Summer Bridge and peer cohort program, but we're implementing things that we know are successful in those programs to help all students. But what I'm trying to really look at is also not just from how we're moving the mark for individual students, which is the most important to change the lives of them or family, but to make sure that we're not limiting our investment when, in fact, if we invested more money in these programs, the student success would be so much higher that it would actually return the revenue in tuition and fee dollars and state formula dollars to pay for itself. So I'm really trying to get us to think more as an institution about whether we should be investing more institutional resources in these programs because they will pay off even from a financial standpoint. Because I think a lot of times we think this from a deficit. Like if our budget goes down or it's flat, we can't afford to put money into these programs. And that's where we were in 2013. We didn't think we could afford to do it. But I want to get to a point where we're good enough with the data and what's working that we invest more money in it and it will return.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just want to compliment you because you said that in the 9-year period you've never had a serious personnel incident or anything like that. But having studied leadership and been part of all that, I mean, it starts at the top, President Patterson, and you set that tone on your campus. If people aren't stealing from each other, I mean, it's the culture of the organization. And I have to tell you, first time I came to campus during the day, we had meeting together, and I mean, I could just feel it by walking around. I mean, it's a really special place that you've created there, and I don't blame you for being cautious about the growth, because how do you keep that wonderful feeling? But it's like a service academy, or it's like Hillsdale College. I mean, the culture's there, and you know, we're going to miss you in 15 months, but the right replacement will continue your legacy. So I just say, this is a wonderful presentation. You've done a wonderful job there, and keep working hard for the next 15 months.
Thank you so much.
Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, just quickly, I'll echo what my esteemed colleague just mentioned. You really have done an incredible job over there. I mean, who am I to suggest or judge, but from what I can see out there and what I hear in the community, it's just it's incredible. I will miss you, too. I've enjoyed working with you.
Thank you.
Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I agree with my colleagues as well, but remember, you started from a point that a lot of people didn't want you, so you had to overcome that. So it's even more remarkable the job that you've done, and so we appreciate all your efforts. Job well done.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions and comments, thank you. We will now go to item number 16, the Nishi Business Centers, CFO Klinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Regents. The Business Center update, this is a report on our ongoing efforts to review business processes and find shared services within the system. This report highlights specifically recent efforts that we've made to develop a system-wide budget and planning tool. When we started this process, we had several institutions that were looking at going out and doing this independently. And so we brought everybody together through this process. And really, one of the benefits of doing that is while some of the larger institutions were going to be able to afford to go out and procure this software for budget and planning, some of the smaller institutions really would have been left behind in that process. So one of the upsides to doing this as a system is that it really brings all of the institutions into the process. The other thing that I can say about just the process that we went through to do this really, I think, is a model for us moving forward on these types of procurements in the future. We obviously have lots more work to do, and frankly, through this process, I think one of the areas that we do need to focus is really on Workday. Because we have some issues in Workday from a consistency standpoint. While we set up the system and we set it up and we have the same what we would call chart of accounts, we are not necessarily using those chart of accounts consistently across the board. And what happens when we do that is we create some problems with reporting and some other things. We also have some challenges in Workday from the standpoint of just the process we go through to make changes to the system. It's a very slow and cumbersome process, as you can imagine, with all the layers of governance that we have. And so in discussions with the business officers, that's something that we want to focus on immediately, is looking at that process and improving that, because obviously Workday has a huge impact on the campuses if it's not functioning in a way that they feel that it should. So we'll be back with future reports, but that's our report for today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. CFO Klinger in here talks about trying to get it implemented by May 1st, recommendation from UNR. Do you think that's feasible?
That's a challenging deadline, but I do think it's feasible. We literally signed the contract 2 days ago, so hopefully we can get it done.
And second question, any estimated savings that dollar amounts have you been able to?
Yeah, and I knew that question was going to come up, and I don't have a specific dollar savings, but certainly from an efficiency standpoint of getting all of the institutions on the same platform, and then really, as I stated, other institutions would have been left behind in this process. So, you know, if the two universities, for example, would have gone out and done this on their own, a lot of the other institutions would have, you know, struggled to implement this type of platform.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. We will now go to item number 40, Employee Buyout Settlements Annual Report. Chief General Counsel Reynolds.
Is there a clicker to use the slides? Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Geddes. I'll try to make this brief. I know it's been a long day. The bottom line with this report is I believe that there's very good news. Last spring, the board adopted a new policy in Title IV of the handbook, which required notice to the Office of the Chancellor anytime there's a buyout or settlement, that the notice was provided through the general counsels of each institution and signed off by the president. The purpose of this, and it was thanks to the board's leadership, to have more accountability and more transparency in this process. And so I was going to briefly go over the statistics for the past calendar year as required by the board's new policy, is to have a public annual report. So the reported buyouts from the calendar year of 2019 are listed on the slide. The amounts total about $713,000, and we had a total of 18 buyouts system-wide. Nevada State College didn't have any. Western Nevada College didn't have any. And the important thing about these buyouts is comparing them to the prior years. Now, it's not necessarily apples-to-apples comparison, because, again, this is the first year that we've done that. But from our calculations, we've seen about a 65% average annual decrease from the institutions. We had at the last report for a two-year total of about $8,800,000. For the calendar year of 2019, we have approximately $713,000. I'm not a math expert, but we calculate it's over an 80% decrease. This is the number of buyouts from UNLV, a total of six buyouts amounting to $347,000. UNR, four buyouts amounting to $91,000. CSN, three buyouts amounting to about $77,000. TMCC 2 amounting to around $71,000, GBC 1 at $25,000, DRI 1 at $40,000, and again, none at WNC or Nevada State, one at the system administration for $60,000. There's a variety of reasons as to why these buyouts occur. Sometimes it's to avoid litigation. Sometimes, you know, there's very much good justification to do those, but there's been a lot of hard work all the way around to decrease these expenditures. And so I'm pleased to report that overall it's very good news.
Thank you, Regent Page, then the Chancellor. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Page. I want to compliment the board, number one, and then President Miana. So when we brought this to the attention of the board, I think you rightfully so asked that we need more transparency on this and asked that we brought it back. And that's what you do as a board, and we did that. But let's be real clear is that really none of the institutions really had a problem with this except for UNLV. I mean, just to be blunt. but if we look at this, if you look at subtract the voluntary separation incentive program from this amount, which I think is fair because that is something we mandate from ENSHE, the total buyouts and settlement for the conflict-related issues for UNLV was $3,422,000 over 2 years. UNLV came in at $347,000 in 2019. So if you half that, about $1.7 million versus $300,000, went from 23 buyouts to 6 buyouts. $3 million over a two-year period, I think we talked about this last year, could have gone a long way towards student success initiatives, et cetera. But I do want to compliment President Miana because it's not easy to change culture and start saying no. You're not getting a buyout. You're not getting a buyout and taking a tough stand on it. I mean, we're talking million-dollar savings on this issue. So I just wanted to compliment Dr. President Miana for the good work she did on this.
Thank you. Regent Page.
Thank you. Chair Geddes, I was just going to ask the numbers where we were coming from to now. That helped clarify it. Thanks.
Thank you. Regent Lieberman, then Hayes.
I just wanted to say that we were a year ago going down a path that was not healthy and was not fiscally sensible. And the collaboration that has been done on this and President Miana's leadership and other people's leadership is vital to changing the culture and making it the way it should be in the first place. So thank you.
Regent Hayes.
At the risk of being redundant, I just want to thank President Miana. I mean, the Chancellor mentioned how hard it was, but I mean, it should be pointed out, you went in as an acting president. It's even harder as an acting president to try to make these changes. And I mean, an average of $1.7 million a year down to $300,000, you saved almost three times your salary. I think we got our money's worth out of you. Let's think about this. That's good. But it's $1.7 million to pay people to not work for UNLV. I'm glad you're working for UNLV. And as much love as Bart's getting today on his way out the door, I think you should get some as well. You went into a really tough situation and have done a heck of a job. So it hasn't been 10 years for you, but thank you.
You're not going out the door yet. We're not paying you to not work. Regent Page.
Thanks, Chair Geddes. Piggyback on Regent Hayes, great job, but also it got to the point people were looking to retire and asked for a package, got a package, and then retired. So it got so out of hand. So, yeah, again, as an acting president, a job well done. So,
Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just want to say I see this as, you know, this is a business, and there are good reasons why we have these buyout settlements. And the fact that we are paying attention as stewards of the taxpayers' money and our foundation's money, this is what we should be doing. This is our fiduciary responsibility. And I do applaud you also, President Miana, for taking the lead and doing such a good job. And it wasn't said today, but I know that the six buyouts there, the number looks large, but one of those was large. And there's a whole story behind that that's not for public information here, but if you took that out, it would be even smaller. So thank you so much.
President Johnson.
Yes, I hate to step in here with all the praise that's going on. I think President Miana deserves the praises. However, if you look at personnel policy, after a person works for an institution for 2 years or more, and they're guaranteed, even if they're separated by getting fired, we still have a responsibility to continue these people as disgruntled employees for an entire year. So this is the reason why some of these buyouts make a lot of sense, is to take a very disgruntled employee and pull them out of the environment where they weren't doing so well. I'm not recommending a policy change necessarily, but some of these buyouts do come about because of the personnel policies that we have.
Regent Hayes, then Chair Frost.
President Johnson brings up a great point. We were in March about 2 or 3 years ago, I believe. Regent Chatrock was chair then. We were just down the street at Nevada State when we tried to make some adjustments to that. And I think it was a good first step, but maybe we want to revisit, and maybe somebody will remind me of new business. Maybe we want to revisit that policy and see if there's a second step we're ready to take.
Thank you. Dr. Frost.
So I just had a question about I know these are reasonably small numbers, but if we knew, are these tenured faculty, non-tenured faculty, classified staff, what percentage of this?
It's Joe Reynolds for the record. All over. And because of personnel confidentiality, we've obviously excluded individual names and some of the reasons as privileged. But they come from a variety of backgrounds. In Chair Geddes, if I just may, I'd also like to give a shout-out to all the lawyers at the institutions who have worked really hard, and also to former Chair Page and you when you were Vice Chair and Chancellor Riley that really wanted to push some of these reforms and greater transparency. So thank you.
Thank you. And that's probably the only time we're going to thank the lawyers these 2 days. Now we're going to pop into item number 30, Nishi Strategic Goal Workforce Development, Vice Chancellor McKinnon and Assistant Vice Chancellor Cage.
Chair Geddes, if I could just kick this off real quick.
And be quick.
As you know, in January 2018, the Board of Regents approved the 5 strategic goals, including Goal 4 on Workforce Development. Specifically, Goal 4 states that NCHE will collaboratively address challenges of workforce and industry education needs of Nevada. NCHE institutions do incredible work with respect to workforce development, particularly in meeting the needs of local employers in high-demand occupations. As Nevada's economy further diversifies, though, we need to ensure that we are poised to continue to build on these successes. In order to do that, we have developed the NCHE Workforce Development Education Initiative, which we began circulating in December of last year. I believe that this plan allows for us to do this at a system level, building upon the good work already underway at each institution. We look forward to your input through this presentation today. And I'd like to introduce Vice Chancellor McKinnon and Assistant Vice Chancellor Cage to present this agenda item.
Thank you, Chancellor. Mr. Chairman, Nate McKinnon for the record, through you to the members. Really quickly, we are excited to bring forward this agenda item today. In your materials, we had two slide decks. The first was a slide deck from the Governor's Office of Economic Development. This process has been very collaborative across our state, working with the Governor's Office of Economic Development, the Office of Workforce Innovation for the New Nevada, Owen, and as well as Dieter, as we've shopped around the plan and what we're looking at. And GOED was going to come today to talk about, or tomorrow rather, to talk about the specifics of where the current needs are in the workforce. However, Mr. Bob Potts, Deputy Director of GOED, had an illness yesterday and was unable to fly down, and we certainly don't want him near us anyways if that's the case. So And what we're going to do instead is do the second part of the presentation, Mr. Chairman, and we would like to invite back Mr. Bob Potts, as well as Executive Director for GOED, Mr. Michael Brown, to a future meeting to discuss that those workforce data slides on current and projected needs, as well as the work that GOED's doing in collaboration and how our NG institutions fit into that. So with that, we'll move right into today's presentation on our Workforce Development Education Initiative. Assistant Vice Chancellor Caleb Cage joined NG on July 22nd of last year. That's about 7 months and 3 weeks and 5 days, 4 days, and I know that because it was my daughter's birthday that she was born, so he's the only employee I can tell you that about in our system. So, since he came, he hit the ground running and was working on how we can better collaborate across our system, work more as a system as we try and meet the workforce needs of each of our regions and the state collectively. Each of our institutions is already doing this within their respective regions, doing great work. How do we pull that all together to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the state as a whole, especially knowing that a lot of our students move from one region to another or get educated in a different region than where they're originally from or will make their home? And so with that, Assistant Vice Chancellor Cage has put together a great plan. Some of you may have seen sneak previews of it already at either the Community College Committee meeting in January, where it was sort of half-baked, and I would describe it now as much more baked but still ready for your input collectively. And then some of you may have seen the nursing portion of this morning at the Health Sciences Committee. So without wasting any further of your time, I'd like to introduce Assistant Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development, Caleb Cage.
Thank you, Chancellor, and Vice Chancellor McKinnon, and Chair Geddes, and members of the Board of Regents, Caleb Cage, for the record. So I'm going to be going through this presentation here, as was noted earlier. Much of the, especially earlier slides, were covered this morning, and out of respect for your time, I know you know a lot of this information already. I will get to the more significant portions of the plan here in a moment. This is based off of the fourth strategic goal for NSHE workforce development, which, as you know, is collaboratively address the challenges of the workforce and industry education needs of the state of Nevada. So this is our plan to do that. Again, this is a high-level facilitative collaborative approach to coordinate and assist the institutions in what they're already doing and to build upon the work that they are already doing so well in their communities and throughout the state. As mentioned this morning, this body approved the top 10 in-demand occupations that came from the Governor's Office of Economic Development in 2018 and added teachers in, and that's important in this presentation here, added teachers into the overall discussion of in-demand occupations in the state. And this is the list we've been working from in our collaboration with the Governor's Office of Economic Development. In the at least 7 months since I've been here, this list, as we've conferred with them and discussed with them, and this list remains substantially the same and a relevant list for us to work from when it comes to addressing the in-demand occupations in the state going forward. So the background for this, as you all know, we have the goal. We've already been over the goal. We also have an impending change that we're expecting or anticipating in the next decade as automation continues to loom and continues to develop, as technology continues to have impact both on workforce but also on education delivery. And so we ask the question, how do we think about workforce development as the economy changes, but also how the workforce development landscape changes? On top of that, has been said a couple of times, at least two or three times so far, how do we build on the excellent work that is happening at the institutions currently? And so those were the two sort of philosophical foundations that we built this plan on with a lot of input over the last 3 or 4 months as we've been socializing it. It really is based on how NSHE can facilitate and coordinate the best practices, the great efforts that are already underway, how we can identify opportunities and ways to be value added in those efforts as well. Also, how do we maximize the intellectual capacity of the system in order to not only develop current needs, but also project future needs going forward, which has come up a number of times in presentations, including President Patterson's conversation about creating jobs for, training people for jobs that don't even exist right now. And then, of course, the need to address a systemic statewide, the statewide challenges that I'll get to here in a moment, and also to build on the workforce development efforts that are underway currently. The challenges that I just spoke about a moment ago are really at the what we see at the system level here. And this is a, I lost my slides, okay, got them here in front of me, a lack of a comprehensive statewide strategic plan. So the institutions have strategic plans that either are completely built around workforce development or include workforce development. How are we as a system looking at this from a strategic level at the system, from a system perspective, and how do we assist the institutions? How do we make sure that this statewide strategic effort is sustainable over time and that it's evolving as the economic landscape evolves in the state of Nevada? How do we develop the need, or we do have a need to develop objective data to draw upon when we're looking at things like the teacher shortage or the nursing shortage or what sorts of careers and career pathways are emerging here in the state? There's also the challenge of having clear and comprehensive understanding of what the operational structure and the funding structure for workforce development is in the state. There are federal entities that pass through state dollars to, or federal dollars to multiple state entities, state dollars, county and local dollars, as well as, of course, the system of higher education resources that go into workforce development. So how do we map that in a way that everybody has one sheet of music to read from? And then finally, a business case so that when we look at things like internships or the need to develop programs in certain communities in the state, how do we take that to our private sector partners, the philanthropists in the state, or build grant cases, build the best cases for grants off of a unified effort and a vision for what we're trying to accomplish in workforce development in the state. So based off of these challenges, we developed a number of deliverables that we wanted to put together in order to address these specifically. Those are our challenges. How do we answer those challenges? The first is again, going back to the development of a strategic plan, an effort that respects and coordinates with and collaborates with the institutional strategic plans, but one that has mechanisms for sustainment in the long run. We want to be able to have a method. We don't know what that method is yet, but a method for leveraging the academic and intellectual resources at our institutions to determine what our current needs are, to assess and analyze, synthesize the data so that we really can see what the statewide industry needs are going forward, to develop education programs accordingly. Again, to assist, not to dictate in any way. If we identify any recommendations, and if those recommendations have any sort of budgetary needs associated with them, identifying those, as well as developing an asset map, an inventory, and a funding structure for workforce development system, for the workforce development system in the state of Nevada, and then finally developing a business case. How we plan to do that, our methodology to do that, is to carry it out in this one initiative that's made up of three strategies. The strategies are, we chose educators because of the critical teacher and licensed education professional needs in the state of Nevada, as well as the great work that's already being underway, like the teacher academies that were discussed earlier and all of the different efforts that are going on through the colleges and regions in the state. We chose nursing as a separate strategy to stand alone as well, because we wanted to make sure we were addressing this critical shortage and critical need in the state. And then the rest of the in-demand occupations fit into what we're calling the emerging pathway strategy. And this is really getting to asking and answering, or attempting to answer the question What is the role of technology in the future of education? How will technology change the future of employment and workforce development in the future? So we will, these pathways are in various forms of being carried forward right now, and they're in separate groups, and I'm the continuity factor between them. So, for instance, we have deans, directors, department chairs in education schools around the state, as well as school districts and other key allies or key advocates as a part of the conversation for how do we really address the, not just the we need more teachers in the classroom, but the root challenges and root causes of the teacher shortage in the state. Carrying out a similar conversation with nursing deans, directors, chairs here in the state, and then working with public and private sector partners on the emerging pathway as well. These are all separate, working separately, and my job is to bring them together and to make sure they're coherent, and any recommendations or strategy that would come out of this is brought together and coordinated in a way that makes sense, and also in a way that can be brought in front of you, can be brought in front of the schools, various subcommittees throughout the state, and make sure we're on track and make sure we're doing what needs to be done. This is going to be, this is being carried out in three phases. We're currently working on really getting everything up and running, developing recommendations that we're going to be developing in order to make improvements in these three areas, and then how do we implement and sustain that going forward in phase three. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, happy to answer any questions or concerns you may have regarding this plan.
Chancellor Riley.
If I can, thank you, Chair Geddes. I think Nate had mentioned this earlier, but the work that Nate and Caleb are doing has been key to some of the work aligning with the governor's office, too, that the sub-cabinet they have on workforce development, the meetings we've been having with GOED, they've been looking at these two as kind of key individuals to help guide that discussion. So we're kind of integral to this whole issue of workforce in the state, and I think they're doing a great job. Thanks.
Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I know we talked a little bit about this. We had public comment in the Community College Committee. Where, Caleb, does behavior and mental health fit in with the governor's? I mean, he identified 10, his task force did, plus we've added teachers, but I want to plead for mental health and behavioral stuff because it causes homelessness, people in prison, it affects veterans. We had a tragedy in Reno yesterday where a mother killed her two children and turned it on, killed the husband and herself. I mean, we've got serious mental health issues in this country, in this state, that we just don't address. There's not enough beds for people that get on drugs. I mean, I could just get on my soapbox because we just don't put the money, the resources in. We're very short of people that are trained in those fields. So that's my editorial.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho. It was an editorial, I thought.
No, my question really was, where in that 10 and 11, where is there even a place in the governor's list of 11 or 10 where mental health is?
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Caleb Cage for the record to Regent Del Carlo. So the 10 that are part of the, actually 11 that are the in-demand occupations in the state, there are some tangential connections to behavioral health. For instance, in the nursing pathway that we're working on, one of the topics of conversation that comes up a lot are the behavioral health connections to nursing on some of the allied health professions. It's definitely tangential to the effort that we have right there. A part of our plan, and this is something that Vice Chancellor McKinnon and Chancellor Riley have been very adamant about, is that this plan is really the initial plan and the initial steps of getting a strategy for workforce development moving, and that there are opportunities to build in other efforts in the future. I have met with Dr. Hunt, who was our public commenter earlier, a number of times now, and will continue to have discussions with her and her team as far as the timeline and the deadlines and everything that we're working on right now. The three pathway strategies are nursing, teaching, or educators and emerging.
Thank you. Regent Carballo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regent Del Carlo, that's exactly what I was going to ask too. Dr. Sarah Hunt from UNLV brought it up before. She brought it up again this morning that mental and behavioral health has got to be a focus for us. And I agree that it falls under nursing. It also falls under education. And I would really encourage you to incorporate mental and behavioral health into this workforce development. Thank you.
Vice Chancellor McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nate McKinnon for the record. To the point of mental health, I think one of the challenges we have as a system on this is educator preparation clearly falls within our schools of education. Nursing clearly falls within our schools of nursing. Mental health crosses many different areas and is not in the same place at all of our institutions. And so the broad-based coalition of folks we need from our NCHE institutions is not as simple as identifying one individual per institution. We've learned that as we've dug a bit into this since that January meeting. And I think it speaks to the complexity of the mental health challenge we have as a nation. And so I think we'll continue to explore this while still putting these other pathways forward. What we don't want to do is just sort of cram it into nursing and pretend that's going to solve the problem, because it's not.
Seeing no other questions or comments, thank you very much. Appreciate it. With that, I think we're going to call it a day, and there is a reception based on the sound of the music. I'm assuming it's on the patio out here. All right. So you're all welcome to the reception, and then we'll see you bright and early in the morning. We'll be starting right at 8 a.m.